show.
Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome, welcome, welcome. Sorry about missing last night. I'll tell you a little bit more about what went on and why I was away from the microphone. But just tickled peachy to be here this midweek edition of Head On. And, of course, it is Wednesday. It's the middle of the week. It's hump day. It's downhill to Friday. But it is ever so much more than any of that. And, of course, you know that. It is, in fact, prayer meeting, brothers and sisters. Choirmaster, fire it up!
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen!
Amen!
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord!
Praise the Lord!
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah!
Hallelujah!
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Present for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, he's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD. Just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah. Solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity, yeah. Whoever said religion should be free?
Hallelujah, brethren and sistren. This is prayer meeting right here in the Cathedral of Common Sense. Come on down the blood-red carpet and lay your hands upon the subwoofers at the altar and feel the healing rays of common sense flowing through you here under the majestic dome of the Cathedral of Common Sense. Amen and amen. Ha! Yes! Oh, I tell you, it is going to, it's, I think we're going to have just a magnificent prayer meeting today. Every now and then you get these little gifts. Little gifts. I was checking my email and I had notes from both Peter Godbold and our good friend Maura alerting me to the following. Namely, the antics, shall we say, of 52-year-old Robert Williams. 52-year-old Robert Williams is chief financial officer of Cincinnati Christian University. He got taken down on this past Saturday, that is, arrested for having, quote, manually stimulated an undercover police officer in Mount Airy Forest. The charge is sexual imposition. Now, what happened is, police, and really, this is kind of the Larry Craig thing all over again. But, and it's not about the sex, it's about the hypocrisy. Please. Police have been running sting operations at folks, places like rest stops, public parks. And in this particular instance, the net was, it caught up Robert Williams, who was manually stimulating an undercover police officer. Manually stimulating. And because the undercover police officer he was manually stimulating was a guy. The university released a statement. Christian University President David Faust. Faust? Really? Oh, brothers and sisters, I tell you, God is a God of irony. Faust? We are shocked and dismayed by the news of Robert Williams' hand job or arrest. This is a personal tragedy for him and his family, and we lift them up in our prayers. Hallelujah. Yeah, it's a personal tragedy for him and his family. Which part? Is it a personal tragedy that he's apparently a sad, closeted 52-year-old man who can't live his own life because he is wrapped in the strict and binding and choking strictures of religious fundamentalism? Is that the tragedy? I don't think that's the tragedy. Is the tragedy the fact that he was caught manually stimulating an undercover guy officer? That might be part of the tragedy. Or is the tragedy that he got caught? Ultimately, I think that's probably the tragedy. Just adds to the list. Just adds to the list. Folks like, there's Larry Craig. Then there's, former Florida lawmaker, McCain co-chair, Bob Allen, who was trying to pay another guy to let him do, wow. Oh, the first inclination is to laugh in part, not laugh at someone else's troubles, but to laugh at the ongoing hypocrisy of the fundamentalist right wing. Chief financial officer, huh? Now, see, the Christian University of Cincinnati Christian University or whatever that little weird outfit is, there wouldn't just be a statement issued. There would be indictment sought if any Christian University money had changed hands in it. Because, after all, their God is not the Lord God. Their God is not Yahweh or Jehovah or Allah or the Possum Goddess. Their God is mammon. Always has been, always will be. Yes, indeedy, we have in front of us a truly stirring prayer meeting tonight. But before we jump into all that, and I'm going straight to the phones because I see a light blinking here. I want a little journalism moment with you, if I may. Because I consider myself fairly capable at the old reading for comprehension gig. And I don't know what this means. I always go and check the headlines at various and sundry news outlets, one of them being the CNN news website outlet. And I read the following headline. 9/11 responders, actually 911, 911 responders. See, I think of the 11th of September 2001 as a date and not some knockoff of a phone code or a really cool German car. 911 responders find woman with maggots. What in the wide, wide world of sports does that mean? Okay, let's give the 9/11 part up and realize that it has a cultural significance. 911 responders. Or is that September 11th, or is that the emergency code? I don't know. I'm guessing emergency code. 911 responders find woman with maggots. Okay, we've got 9/11 responders, and we've got a woman who was found with maggots. Is this a misprint? Is this 9/11 responders find woman with magnets? And she was maybe under an old sheet of, in an old metal garbage can or, some sort of metal barrel, and they did the magneton, beep, 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 and they, no. Or is it, or did the woman have maggots when they found her? Or maybe this is one of those weird science stories where by using a team of highly trained maggots, they found the woman. Get up there, Blue. Get up there, Redbone. The scene with the bloodhounds out of Cool Hand Luke. And you got to run through the stream and run along in the water for a while to throw the hounds off. Maybe they're doing that. I don't know. What in heaven's name has happened to journalism in this country? It's amazing. Just astonishing. So I just wanted to share that because every now and then I see these little journalism things and I just go a little bit crazy. So there's that. But I'll babble more later. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bishop Bob.
Hey, what's up, Susan? Welcome back.
Did your healing rays through the subwoofer heal busted bones?
I don't think so, but we're hoping maybe this will create some sort of holistic thing that'll help them knit faster. And Pearl too.
As long as no stitches are dropped. I have to admit, you pretty much did me in with the maggots thing.
Well, I don't know. Susan, I've got this picture in my head of some guy or woman in a uniform with, you know how they've got those multiple leashes that have four or five bloodhounds?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, do this with thread with, like, 1,000 little maggots. Now, I don't know.
Well, the first thing that popped into my head was some horrendously disapproving Republican saying, No, that's a sin against God.
Oh, no! It's an unnatural union of a woman. Oh, no, don't. No. Oh, I've got the power shutters now.
I sincerely hope it wasn't the other alternative, which is entirely possible. Seeing what part of the country I come from. Well, let me put it this way.
Oh, okay. I admit.
Is home to Ted and, you know, otherwise known as Ted Bundy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the Green River Killer. And they were a whole lot stranger than most people thought.
Okay. I just scrolled down a little bit and I saw it there. Woman infested with maggots. One simple word, infested.
But oh, well, now that makes it a little bit a lot clearer.
Yeah, it does. But up there on the big time stories, you know, 9/11 responders find woman with maggots. I was really hoping it was magnets. You don't know how badly I wanted that to be magnets, Susan. Now I don't dare go to sleep till about sunrise for fear of the stuff that's inside my poor little subconscious aching to get out now.
Well,
the horror.
You have no idea what I dream about. I dream of some of the weirdest dreams. They're space dreams with bathroom fixtures, like faucets going off into space, you know. I'm going, you are really one strange woman.
This has got to mean something.
I still haven't figured that one out. Basically, what I'm trying to do, I thought I'd see if I could actually get up here in time to give you a call. I'm just trying to catch up.
Well, you do have some catching up to do. You've been away from the cathedral for a while.
Yeah, and I've got all these shows to listen to, and I'm going, oh my God. And I can't find my MP3 player.
Well, that's even worse.
Yes. I managed to lose it. So now I've got, the only way I can listen to all these shows is through the computer. So I have to come up here and slog through the shows. I finally managed to get through most of the election night show from your show.
Yeah, that was the 9-hour audio dump, yes.
Yeah.
But it was an awful lot of fun.
Oh yeah, I gotta tell you, the part where John Fox, you know, comes back in, he after the acceptance speech, and you can tell what he's been doing, and he says he's just racked. Well, I'm sitting there. It's December. And I'm still wrecked.
I know.
Every time they run that, any part of that, I just toddle up and go, just no.
Yeah, well, let's see. I haven't checked the count. I didn't look at the counter in the chat room. How many days do we have left now? 47 days, 17 hours, 41 minutes, and 27 seconds.
We got to wait that long.
I know, it seems like longer. And, you know, when you get things, I don't know if you saw the clip, Mark Levine played a little bit of it on his show, Susan. This exit interview that Dim Leader gave to Charlie Gibson.
Oh, yeah, where he's trying to rewrite history.
Well, it's not just that he's trying to rewrite history. It's how he said, I mean, we're used to him just bungling the language. But somehow or another, I don't know. When I saw this, it was almost like I had forgotten. We had a period of time where he wasn't quite so loopy. And now apparently he's back on the sauce. That's all, there was that report of him drinking a pisco sour while he was somewhere, South America, I don't know. But apparently he's back on the sauce. Because did you see Pickles' face in that interview?
Uh-uh.
Well, she's got her head cocked a little bit to one side. Her facial expression looks like that it was plastered on.
Uh-huh.
With this set mouth, just staring daggers. I presume at Charlie Gibson or the cameraman or something. And I'm thinking that's a really, really angry woman.
Well, do you blame her?
Well, no. I mean, you know, Dimebag Laura has put up with a lot, we got to admit.
Yeah. Oh, and if I were her, hey, look, message to Laura. Don't move to Dubai. You'll regret it.
No, it's she has officially said they're moving to Dallas. They're going to live in Dallas. Although
yeah,
I personally think there will be an airstrip somewhere nearby that can hustle them off to Paraguay at the earliest convenience.
Well, you know, for her own sake, I sincerely hope it's someplace like Paraguay and not someplace like Dubai where, you know, well, you know what, how women are treated in Arab countries.
Well, yes, of course. Not so nice.
You know, just ick, ick. And I would, you know, even for even Dimebag Laura, I wouldn't wish that on. But the thing, I watched the rollout today of our new nominee for Commerce Secretary.
Yes.
And it was kind of funny because all the reporters were trying to denigrate it, and Obama was trying to puff it up. So it was kind of a tug of war of what was going on.
Well, Fox did get their first news question in at a news press conference today, finally.
Oh, finally.
Yeah. They were like 0-5 or something. And people were beginning to wonder, you know, if Obama would ever call on Fox. And not would have been just fine as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, you and me both.
So.
Because let's face it, most of what they're saying anyway is going to be made up. They'll just go home. They'll just go back to the studio and make it all up anyway. What is the consensus regarding the cabinet so far?
I don't know that there is one. CNN's reporting that everybody thinks that his cabinet choices are just hunky dory.
Chicken noodle news. Who cares? You know, I'm talking about the real people that we hang out on the net.
There are people that seems to divide into two camps, Susan. One, let him pick anybody he wants to. He's not in office yet, and don't you dare criticize it. And the other, to which apparently I belong, that is along the lines of some level of integrity demands that we at least talk about who these people are.
Mm-hmm.
And by that I mean to point out, for instance, that so far on the cabinet you have a former board member of Walmart. You've got a staff counsel for Chiquita Brands, who hired terrorists to shoot union organizers.
Yeah, that just kills me.
And now you've got a national security advisor nominee who was the vice president of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce for Energy Affairs.
Oh, lovely.
And the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, of course, does what? Well, they advocate that more of my home gets blown up.
I have to tell you, the thing that's going to, for me, it's going to come down to one thing. If Obama successfully shoves off prosecutions into some, quote, commission, that's it.
Well, I'm not going to do a that's it, Susan. I do acknowledge that none of these people have had a chance to do anything yet.
Yeah, I realize that.
And I refuse to jump into that pool of people who have made a lifestyle out of Clinton hating.
Yeah. I'm getting awful sick of that. Yeah.
There are people out there, Susan, who have me on their blast email list. They never listen to this program, but somebody along the way gave them my email address and said, "Well, I ought to send that to Bob." And so I get occasionally these little blast emails, for instance, from people who are ostensibly liberal or the progressive or you know, the far left or whatever you want to call them. And damned if I'm not getting copies of the Clinton body count.
Yeah.
From people who are supposed to be liberal.
Yeah, it's like, that one person that the MSN has on a lot, that Christopher Hitchens.
Oh, he's just
he's weird.
Well, with the exception, I mean, I like what he says about God and about organized religion, but with that sole exception, the rest of the time he just sounds like a cranky old drunk.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm sitting there going, oh, dear, this I don't need. And there's several other people that have turned out to be absolutely obsessive about it. Now, she may turn out to be the world's worst Secretary of State.
No, no, because the world's worst Secretary of State is leaving office right now, Susan.
Well, yeah, that's true. She can also turn out to be hell on wheels. She could proceed to take that job and shake it like a terrier.
Yeah, and I mean, you can't fault the work ethic.
No. She's going to work her butt off, and everybody knows it.
Now, you know, in the course of this discussion, you brought up something that I find very, very interesting. And it's something that I've heard enunciated by other people in the past, but without a name being put to it. And if you go and use the Google and look it up, something called the Overton window. And essentially the Overton window is a political theory that says that political change is affected by people all sort of pulling on the same rope in the same direction. And that the people who are moderates are actually in line, or not in line, but, you know, they're moving in the same direction as the people that are deemed the extreme, the far, the whatever.
Yeah.
And so, and it applies to political ideas.
Yeah, I've got a problem with what he's doing, because I never expected the man to be a raving liberal.
Well, there was no evidence to suggest it. There was precisely zero evidence throughout the political process, the presidential primaries, the general election. There was absolutely nothing except the ravings of the crazier than a sprayed roach right wing Repiglicans. He's the most liberal man that's ever breathed air on the planet.
Yeah, and
you know, if I was Russ Feingold or Bernie Sanders, I'd take issue with that. You know, you spend
I get really ticked.
Yeah, especially Bernie. You know, Bernie spent a career trying to define what liberal is, and just because a guy runs for president, he's automatically elevated to most liberal man in the universe.
Yeah, and it to me, you know, I'll cut him enormous amounts of slack as far as who his cabinet is, the whole nine yards, how his policies, the whole nine yards, because I realize he is a centrist, and he never made any bones about that. I wanted the liberal. Unfortunately, that liberal's name was Dennis Kucinich, and he never got in. That's life. But when it comes down to something as basic as a government that runs on the concept of precedents, having, if the president does it, it's not illegal, having that in
yeah, some of that, that kind of stuff's got to go.
That's the wall I run into.
But lo and behold, you know, here we are, and I may be guilty. I had a real sense of creepiness about Robert Gates being a holdover from the Bush administration.
Yeah.
But here's a guy who's out there running around talking about closing down Gitmo and having us out of Iraq in 16 months.
Because, okay, say what you will about Republicans, they know how to be good little soldiers.
Yeah, are you suggesting that with the change in the presidency, this guy will do what he's told?
Exactly.
Maybe. But by the
That's
same time...
I don't have any problem with... the national security advisor because he spent most of his life as a Marine.
No, he was a commandant of the Marine Corps.
Yeah, so when the commander-in-chief says, you do this, he's going to salute and say, yes, sir.
That's what you hope. Now, the other side of that coin, however, to be fair, is that if you've got a military man as your national security advisor, and I simply ask this question for purposes of discussion and for purposes of analysis, it's that old thing about hammers and nails, isn't it? If you've got a military man as a national security advisor, isn't that a situation where if all your problems look like nails, all your solutions are going to look like hammers?
And that's why.
Or is it the exact opposite, Susan, where there's something you hear from military types on a fairly regular basis that, you know, professional soldiers hate war more than anybody else?
Well, I don't know about that.
Can't help thinking back to that wonderful line from the Patton movie, which, of course, was a movie and not necessarily reality.
Yeah.
Where Patton says, God, I love it so.
Yeah. What I think is, say you've got a professional soldier as a national security advisor. But then you turn around, and for all her hawkishness, she's not stupid. You've got Hillary sitting there. And you've got Joe sitting there, both of them ready to say, are you blankety blank out of your mind?
Well, but now, I mean, to be fair, that's I give the left, what, I don't know, the left, the schmeft, I give people some credit for, because, look, we're supposed to participate in our government because it is a republic based on principles of representative democracy. That means that ultimately we're the ones who are supposed to be speaking. It's the fact that we're not speaking that has created the problem. It's the marching in lockstep that has created so many problems. So I don't fault people for looking up and saying, well, you know, Hillary kind of talked about being willing to attack Iran and Joe Biden hasn't exactly been a peacenik.
Yeah, and then here is...
Although he did vote against the first Bush war, which is, you know...
Yeah. Here's Barack Obama, who is gathering all these people together, and he's saying, I want people who won't say yes. But at the same time, you can bet their opinions are going to be loudly and...
plainly made?
Profoundly expressed.
Yeah. But yet, you know, it's
all balance there.
It's also about, like I said, with the business, Barack Obama's most liberal man on earth. These are right-wing themes and memes.
Yeah.
And what you get out of that is, you know, we know they just make crap up. They just make it up, get up in the morning, have their coffee, you know, drop a little acid, and start making up stuff. Things like all this business about, what Flush Flimball said, you know, about why Obama chose Hillary. My friend, you keep your friends close and your enemies closer. He has just precluded her from running in 2012.
No.
Well, I read some statistic that out of the number of votes cast while they were both in the Senate together, they differed on only 7 votes.
Exactly.
Now, they're not that different.
No, they're not. He's a centrist. He always has been. And anybody who thought otherwise was deluding themselves. I'm sorry.
On the other hand, you know, and that's the thing. I'm trying to strike a balance here, Susan. And I'm not trying to strike a balance with you or with anybody else listening to the program. I'm trying to strike a balance in my own mind between what I want and what I recognize as possible.
Well,
and that is a tough little internal monologue.
Yeah, I'm willing to give a whole lot without so much as a peep. If the man wants to do it this way, hey, it's your government. Have at it, guys. You're the one who got yourself elected. You know, fine and dandy. But there are certain things that I just will not.
And?
Give up on.
Yeah.
And?
Torture, domestic spying, habeas corpus, health care.
And prosecuting these people who did this and not letting the precedent being set.
Well, keep up the pressure, Susan, because that is not going to happen without the pressure. And even with the pressure, I'd say it's still about 95% against.
I know, but that's why we've got to. That's why I'm yelling my head off.
And that's why. And that's why I brought.
And isn't even in office. I'm already yelling my head off. I'm already yelling my head off to him about mountaintop removal.
Yeah. Well, you know, he said. He said at one point, "We've got to find a way. We've got to find a better way to get at coal than blowing up mountains." And you take that as a positive, but by the same token. Does it necessarily reflect the immediacy and the now-ness of the need to stop blowing up mountains? Because, see, the Bush administration, as Mark Levine just pointed out, they stuck the shiv in, you know, one last good one.
Oh, yeah.
Maura sent this story to me. White House on Tuesday approved a final rule that'll make it easier for coal companies to dump rock and dirt from mountaintop mining operations into nearby streams and valleys. And I understand what the New York Times is trying to get at, but to say rock and dirt is so poisonously, ridiculously simplistic.
Misleading.
It's not. Yeah, it's misleading.
It's not
and
just that.
Well, let me give you an example, Susan. The mountaintop removal job that's going on 3 miles as the crow flies from my house, maybe two. Before they can do a mountaintop removal job, they have to do core drills. They have to do core sampling. You know, they drill down actually further than they think they're going to blow up. And then they're supposed to analyze all that, and they're supposed to take into account what all's in there. Well, in this particular mine, there is an freakishly, unusually high concentration in a layer above the coal they're going after of selenium. That stuff stuff's really, 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 really poisonous. Nobody in their right mind would go after it because there's no way you can keep it out of the water supply. There's no way you can keep it from affecting the local environment and everything downstream. But they're going to do it anyway. So that's not, you know, that's not really rock, dust, and dirt.
See, when I'm, you know, you can, if you're, you know, you can contact the transition team through the website. And so I'm still sending in emails, and I'm not saying mountaintop removal is bad. I'm saying you have the biggest ticking time bomb of all time. Sitting in Appalachia.
And it is.
Ready to go off.
Sure. It absolutely
and it's
is.
Called all of that heavy metal and all of that stuff that is polluting almost the entire eastern seaboard's water.
And more than that when you get right down to it. Further than that.
And that's how I'm putting it. It's not as this is a bad thing. Yes, it is. But what I'm saying is, this is a ticking time bomb that's going to explode in your face, and you don't want to even be anywhere near it. Because it's going to get ugly.
Well, I hear, here. It already is.
Yeah.
We got explained to us last night how, and just bear with me for a minute, Susan. If you feel the need to scream, I'll understand. The selenium issue that I just mentioned.
Yeah.
There's no way. I mean, there's no good amount of selenium to consume. You know, like the FDA, Food and Drug or USDA USDA has certain standards for the amount of mouse poop in a hot dog that's acceptable for human consumption.
Yeah.
There's really not a way to, I mean, they have standards, but no selenium is good for a person. just isn't.
Yeah.
So they get this layer. They blow it up, okay? They blow it up. And it's boom. Yeah, and it raises a whole bunch of dust. And we get told by the DEP, well, they're really good at confining that dust. Really? You're kidding, right? But they say this kind of stuff with a straight face. So you try to ask them, well, what happens to the selenium when they bring that out? Well, they have to put that in a dry spot on the mine within the permit. They have to put that on a dry spot within the permit. Really? A dry spot. And that dry spot is how? I mean, this is the Appalachians noted historically for really, really adequate rainfall for the most part. Where's the dry spot within the permit? Well, that means where it can't flow into the valley fills. What, you mean there's valley fills? No, there's no valley fills. Well, where's this dry spot? Well, that just means where no water can get through and down and get into the streams. And again, Susan, they say that with a straight face.
Oh, my God.
And I'm just sitting there last night at this meeting with my mouth just catching flies. And then I get it explained to me, well, I understand how you wouldn't know what we're talking about because, you know, you don't have a background in mining. Yeah, I don't understand what you're talking about because I don't have a background in mining. Because I'd have to have a background in mining to understand that dry means without the presence of liquid. You can't call something dry unless it's not going to get rained on. Or wet somehow, because that's the thing. When it gets wet, the selenium's carried away, and it gets into the yada, 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 yada.
Uh-huh. You can't keep it dry even if you stick it in the middle of Death Valley.
And that's why I looked at him.
Right,
and that's why I looked at him and said, so what, you know, so you're talking about a dry place? I mean, what, with a tarp over it, a dome, a building, a concrete structure, you know, encased in what? No, we mean somewhere on the permit where the water that goes through it won't drain into the creeks.
Oh, my God.
At which point, I a little bit later just had to get up and sort of walk out of the room for a little bit.
I hear the sound of banjos. You know,
from
deliverance.
Yeah, but the thing is, anywhere that it rains on that stuff, the water's going to percolate through.
Yeah.
Whether it drains directly into a stream or whether it goes into, I don't know, how about the water table?
Uh-huh.
An aquifer.
There to the nearest big city.
Or...
And then what do they do when people start dying? Do they call it a terrorist attack?
No, we call that progress. That's what we need, because coal keeps lights on.
Yeah, well, what's going to happen when there aren't any more people? There's an amazing show on PBS. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's called Life After People.
I've heard about it. I haven't seen it. Well, then again, it's just I don't do a lot of TV.
And it's basically what happens to the planet if suddenly, poof, there are no more people.
The planet gets well. I mean, I'm not one of these people that, we'd all be better off without us. I mean, I'm enjoying my little ride here.
It's literally amazing to watch all of the things that would go on, and you would be surprised. Actually, one of the things that would, the lights in Vegas would stay on for several hundred years.
Huh?
Yeah. Hoover Dam. It's all automatic. But sooner or later, even it would foul, and then poof, it goes dark again. And then maybe the cockroaches or whoever it is that's destined to come up after us. But we're fouling our own nest. This is exactly why we need to get, what we actually need to do is get Barack Obama in Marine One on January 21st and fly him over Caford Mountain.
Oh, and any number of the other nightmares. Just take the whole tour. It won't take that long. Have a good long look. Get a big old gander full.
Yeah, let him see it. And there's no way they can't. They're certainly not going to stop Marine One. And it's not that far from the Capitol, so he can just get in a helicopter, go boop, bop up over to West Virginia, and take a look and throw up, and then go home and realize he's got an even bigger problem than he thought, because when those poisons eventually hit the cities, they die.
Sure. But, you know.
And all of those people in those cities will die. You want to talk about a mass die-off?
Not really, but yeah.
Because, you know, it's just, the more I got into this, the more appalled I got, because it's amazing how fragile a city is. It's like the entire city of New York depends on three tunnels.
Oh, there's not a city in this country that is not fragilely located, and the vast majority of them extremely fragilely located, from, you know, San Francisco to the big cities out near where you live, San Diego, Miami, Boston,
and on the eastern
Philly.
Shore, they're fragile because of water.
Yeah, they can either be inundated with it or done out of it.
Yeah, and if they're done out of a clean source of water, they die. The people in them, they're...
And see, that's one of the things that's one of the things we're trying to accomplish, Susan, is to just raise awareness in places like D.C. and Baltimore and Baltimore and Philly and Boston and New York and so forth, that as to where the electricity comes from, because you're not always going to have Appalachian coal to keep your lights on. It's just not going to last forever. And through the miracle of exponential growth, what starts out, you know, the coal companies, the coal association, that dirty crowd, are, we got 500 years of coal. Well, those are estimates based on God knows when usage patterns. But we're not, you know, we don't use at a steady baseline. We go up and up and up and up and up and up and up, because the consumer is the religion of consumerism demands that we add more electronic gizmos and gadgets.
Exactly.
I mean, someone and I had this conversation the other night. Unless you are manually unable to do it, why do you have an electric can opener? Now, for
that's
those...
I know. I haven't had one for years.
We don't have one either. But you know what? You and me we're in the minority. I mean,
I've never understood the electric can opener bit. Somebody gave me one for Christmas once, and I used it for a while, and I said, nah, and I gave it away.
I love what Alton Brown, Good Eats on the channel, another one of the channels we don't get anymore. He's got this thing. He said, I will not have anything in my kitchen that will not multitask. If it can't serve more than one function, it don't. And then, you know, while Bob, it's got a knife sharpener on the back. You got a knife sharpener at the end of your arm.
Yeah.
Get the stone, pull it.
That's exactly what hubby did. He went out and bought a stone, and now he sharpens the knives.
And, of course, nobody who respects a high-quality kitchen knife would ever drag it through one of those electric nightmares on the back of an electric can opener.
Oh, no, that's a good way to ruin a knife.
But anyway, I really respect some of that. But to return to the point, more and more and more and more, God, how many more?
That brings me to my second point.
Sure.
This country will not survive if it does not start manufacturing stuff again. I did not come up with this. I hate to say this. This is straight from hold on to your horse, Pat Buchanan.
Oh.
Say this.
Oh.
I guess.
Oh.
I agree with the man. If we do not have some type of manufacturing in this country, all we're doing is sending the money overseas, and we become a client state.
Kind of already are, aren't we?
Yeah, but if we want to get out of it, we need to start manufacturing stuff for here. And that means doing things like, how about recreating the steel industry in this country?
And learning to do it in modern methods that don't destroy the place that they're making it?
Exactly.
But there's that, and there's the stuff that goes with it. I've been really, really impressed with what I've read of this joint study that was issued a week or so ago by the AFL-CIO, the Boilermakers, and... I'm not sure if it was EDF or either EDF or NRDC. I can't remember which. That says that the way you rejuvenate the economy is through greening the economy.
Yeah.
How many more people do you suppose, for instance, mountaintop removal in this state employs about 5,000 people in a state of more than a million.
Yeah.
And we're told that those 5,000 people are the only thing that are standing between West Virginia and utter economic ruin. Never mind.
How about a nice wind farm that will probably use a whole lot more jobs than that?
Well, sure. But let's think of the broad big picture, Susan. How about a wind turbine factory?
Yes. So we'll make the silly things.
Let's give the mountaintop removers a chance to have a real life that does
exactly.
not rely on destroying the homes of their neighbors.
And especially if you can make it out of U.S. steel that is made in an environmentally reasonable manner, especially if that involves using alternative energy, like the wind or the sun.
Sure. And that's what I was saying about the cities of the Eastern Seaboard. And I only mentioned the northern ones. You know, Lord knows, West Virginia coal keeps the lights on in Atlanta, and Charlotte, and Richmond.
It keeps the lights on in Scappoose, Oregon.
Well, yeah.
Oh, boy, did I have a conversation with a friend I made at the Obama office over that one, too.
But we've got to get these cities.
I got her about convinced, too.
Well, good. We've got to convince these cities, or not convince, but make them understand that this is not, there's that word, sustainable.
No, it's not. Now, this may be, Oregon may be the wonderful green paradise. Yeah, but parts of Oregon are living on the death of West Virginia, and it's not sustainable.
No, it's not. On the other hand, however, to the extent that we still have mountains, we have mountains that can support industrial wind.
Yeah.
And the lights can stay on in D.C. and Atlanta. In Nashville, in Charlotte, in Richmond, in Columbia, South Carolina, in Charleston, in Savannah. The lights can stay on. And this can still be a place that we can live in.
Yeah. All you have to do is just stop. I picked it up from you, so, you know, we're preaching to each other. But... I hate to say this, but occasionally I actually find myself agreeing with Pat Buchanan.
Well, you know, even a stop clock's wrong twice, right twice a day.
Well, he's been right a couple times in the past few days because He was on television over the discussing the auto industry bailout. And
I've never known Pat Buchanan to be a big lover of the unions. He was right on this?
He said, you let those companies die, and you're killing industry in America. It'll never come back. And I'm sitting in there with my jaw on the floor. And then he proceeds to outline why he thinks that way, and he's right. You know, who's going to want to buy a car from a company that just went bankrupt? Nobody.
Well, because you don't know if there'll be parts there.
Exactly.
I'm glad you did bring this up, Susan, because among other things, I saw a different Pat. I saw Francis Pat Robertson today. Just walking through the room, and you know, there he was, and sitting. The legacy costs of an American car are $3,000, and it's because union workers are making $75 an hour, and Jesus doesn't love this.
Of course, Pucky. He was, according to Buchanan, this is what really shocked me, is he was saying the difference between the price of an American car and a Japanese car is Japanese car does not have FICA built into it. It does not have health insurance built into it. It's the fact that the companies in some of these places are state-owned and run at a loss. And the whole night, and he was good. And I'm saying, Pat, you're sounding like a liberal.
I don't know how deep into the analysis I'm even remotely qualified to go, but
it's scary.
Yeah, it is. But at the end of you just can't, as Levine noted, you can't blame the guy on the assembly line for the fact that the big three have insisted on putting out crap automobiles that get 9 miles to the gallon.
And, you know, and that's another thing that Buchanan said. You can't blame the people on, the workers for that. And if you kill these companies, who's going to provide those 3 million jobs? And he just literally shouted this right-wing dude from the right-to-work states down. He just...
Right, and that's the thing that Pat Robertson was prattling on about. If only we can kill the unions, then the big three can come out of the bank. The big three can come out of the bankruptcy healthy and competitive.
Uh-huh, right. Every car company on the planet, that includes Europe, that includes Asia, China, all of them, they are all being propped up by their governments to a certain extent. Because...
Right, and we want the rest of the world to change instead of us changing to something more akin to something that's been proven highly successful.
Yeah. And, you know, give me a break. You know,
I still go a little bit nuts when I think that $700 billion okay for Wall Street, $25 billion not okay for Detroit.
Did you hear what the president of the United Steelworkers said?
No.
He said the people who take a shower before they go to work have no problem getting a bailout. The people who take a shower after they come home from work, they can't get any help. That just about says it all.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
You know, props to the president of the United Steelworkers. He was on Rachel Maddow yesterday, and he was just...
Well, Ron, and Ron Gettelfinger, Ron Gettelfinger, the president of the United Auto Workers, with whom I have real issues wildly apart from this particular issue, has said, you know, he criticized states like Alabama that use taxpayer dollars to lure in companies like Mercedes, Daimler Benz.
And then say to the workers, go apply for Medicaid.
Among other things, yeah. Because you can't unionize in, you can't organize in Alabama.
Now, the last I heard, the support from the Obama camp was an unequivocal, yeah, he's going to sign it. So,
it's got employee free choice?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got to get through the Senate.
Yeah. Well,
that's all. I mean, that's all there is to it. Look, you know me. I got Alabama connections and Alabama roots, Susan. But if I had the money to run out and buy a Mercedes Benz, I would make damn sure it was a Mercedes Benz that was built in Germany. I'm not buying that little three-pointed star. I'm buying the workmanship.
Yeah.
Now at this point in time, I got the money. I got to put Detroit and a so-called American car at the front of the line, because you know what?
Yeah.
I do, Susan. I do. I owe that. And let me say that and be abundantly clear. I owe that to my fellow Americans. Because I don't just idly say this. I look for stuff that's made in the United States.
Yeah.
I actively look for it. And you can find it, but you've got to be willing to be something more than a mindless sheep being herded through the aisles at Wally World.
Well, A, I won't go into Waller World, and B, I look for a different type of thing. If it's made in China, I won't buy it.
But there's some stuff. There's some stuff that if you won't buy it from China, you buy God go without.
Well, that's exactly what I do.
And I'm not criticizing. I am not criticizing. But look at us here. All right. Two grandchildren. Babies. Really. I occasionally refer to Agnes and my kids as the babies. But the babies are 11 and 12 and 14. But we got two grandchildren here who are baby babies.
Yeah.
And they're on infant formula.
Diapers.
They're on infant formula.
Yeah.
And frankly, there is no such thing as a can of infant formula with something on the label that says all components made strictly in the United States. Or better yet, there's no such thing as a can of infant formula that has a label on it that says nothing in this formula came from China.
Yeah, that's...
You cannot buy it.
You're in a position where you're stuck.
I'm over a barrel. We're over a barrel. There's millions upon millions of Americans who are over that barrel. And we're over a barrel that is largely of the right wing and the Republican Party's making, and it's a barrel they love.
Yeah.
Because you know the people who build the barrels usually do well no matter what's done with the barrel. It's the people who are bent over them that have the trouble.
Yeah, I know one thing I did when my kids were little. Disposable diapers were big. And I flat refused to, I wouldn't use them. I used cloth diapers, and I washed the suckers myself. It was a lot of extra work, but by the same token, well, to me, there was nothing better than the smell of a freshly washed diaper just pulled off the line.
Oh, wind power. Heh, look.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, there's, well, I'll go into this a little bit later in the program, but we've got to get the ability back to let Americans do for Americans.
Yeah, and buy American stuff instead of just stimulating China's economy. Who gives a rip? China can handle themselves quite nicely.
You know, and the funny thing out of all this is, well, the legacy cost of an American car has $1,400 or $3,000, whatever the right winger's making up at the time, of health care built into it. And they in their twisted, odd, just sort of snail-traily, slippery, slimy, scummy little minds, they take that and they extrapolate that to mean that it's bad for people who build cars to have health care. When in actuality, the answer to that is, let's take that legacy cost out of the cost of an American car by letting all Americans support each other in a healthcare system that makes sure that no one doesn't have coverage.
Exactly.
So, you know. Yeah.
And I got that shoved in my face here just recently because I've got insurance, but it only pays 80%. So I get to pay the other 20%. And guess what? I can't.
Yeah.
And
again, that's another one of those things. A lot of the health care crisis in this country, while the Republicans want to the extent that they acknowledge it, and they're not like the guy who looked at me and said, there's not a single soul in America goes without health care. You can walk into any emergency room in America and have the best care in the world. Huh? Well, to the extent that a Republican even acknowledges it, they tend to talk about the people who have no coverage at all.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're losers and bums and no goods. And never mind the fact that they go to work at 2, 3, 4 jobs, you see. But the fact of the matter is, a big old hunk of the healthcare crisis in America is what you just mentioned, Susan. And that is those people who have 80-20 policies. You know, 20% of a $250,000 procedure, and it don't take long to get to $250,000 anymore.
No, not really.
20% of that is $50,000. Now, let's say you've got one of those health care savings accounts that George Bush was so fond of a few years back. Goodbye.
Yeah, right. One of those health care savings accounts wouldn't even take you to the emergency room.
Precisely. Susan, this has been a wonderful conversation, and I know it was tough for you to get upstairs to the computer, but I trust you're getting better, and I can't wait till you can get up there with without a bunch of pain or misery.
Well, I'm endeavoring to persevere, and if I don't get up every day, it's not because I've fallen or anything. It's just because my foot's achy or whatever, and so I decided to give it a rest. Yeah.
Sighted stairs, snuck up same.
Right.
Susan, take care and say hi to Donald for us.
Come back and say hi to everybody and love to everybody in the chat room.
I'm so glad you did, and we look forward to hearing from you again soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. Wow, all kinds of topics inside that conversation. Isn't conversation radio just something? Thanks, guys. Thanks for everything that you make this network be. It's a lot more fun with y'all than it would be with me just sitting here screaming into a microphone, I can promise you. So that's the first hour and a little bit more. And what we'll do is we'll take a quick break. Light them up if you want to. 304-658-3333, 877-443-2366 are the phone numbers. And if you're willing to be there, I'm willing to come to it. That's how it works. Email comes into bob@headonradio.com. And we have all kinds of opportunities for wonderful conversation. It's Wednesday night. It's prayer meeting. And this is America's liberal voice. This is the horn.
the streets are filled with laughter and light, and the music of the season, and the merchants' windows are all bright with the faces of the children, and the families hurrying to their homes as the sky darkens and freezes. We'll be gathering around their hearts and tables, giving thanks for God's graces. And the birth of the rebel Jesus, oh, they call him by the Prince of Peace, and they call him by the Savior, and they pray to him upon the seas. And in every bold endeavor, and they fill his churches with their pride and gold, as their faith in him increases. But they've turned the nature that I worship him from a temple to a robber's den. In the words of the rebel Jesus, and once a year when Christmas comes, we give to our relations, and perhaps we give a little to the poor if the generosity should seize us. But if any one of us should interfere in the business of why there are poor, get the same as the rebel Jesus. But pardon me if I have seemed to take the tone of judgment, for I've no wish to come between this day and your enjoyment. In a life of hardship and of earthly toil, there's a need for anything that frees us. So I bid you pleasure and I bid you cheer from a heathen and a pagan. On the side of the rebel Jesus.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
I just love that song, and I hope you do too. Jackson Browne and the Rebel Jesus. A lot of truth in there, without a doubt. And I'm going to go right back to the phones, but I want to share something with you real quick. Just to remind you that the crazies and the wingnuts are most assuredly still out there. And I want to juxtapose it with something. Namely, just take these two things together. First of all, this is a wingnut. This is a wingnut writing. Talking about the Christmas season and holidays and whatnot. You're going to love this. It's prayer meeting night, so you know, this is it's open season on this kind of idiocy. I've never heard so much disgraceful music as I've heard on the radio this year at Christmas time. It's sickening. Many Christmas songs have rock music beat. Others are sang by known Homer sectionals. Some songs, how does he know? Just asking. Some songs are sang so fast that it's utterly annoying. There's songs about wanting front teeth back for... Try this again. Bob reading in 3, 2, 1. There's songs about wanting front teeth back for Christmas. Going on a sleigh ride. Anything to remove Jesus Christ from the minds of people. It's so sad. It's like a broken tooth and a foot out of joint to hear the despicable Dolly Parton singing Christmas carols. In 1982, Dolly starred in a vile movie, The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. The movie's still highly sought by perverts today. Do you know what the movie's all about? It's about a small-town sheriff and regular patrons of the whorehouse fighting to keep the whorehouse open when a TV preacher targets it as the devil's playhouse. And you listen to her hypocritical music. Dolly just re-recorded an old Led Zeppelin song, Stairway to Heaven. Then there's Johnny Cash's Christmas album. I tell you, now, if you're going to start on John Cash, we're going to have a problem, mister. Then there's Johnny Cash's Christmas album. Do you know he re-recorded two songs by Glenn Danzig, a known Satanist? Glenn Danzig, spewing his hatred for the Lord Jesus Christ, proudly designed a logo for the band, a demon strangling Jesus Christ with blood gushing from Jesus' eyes. I'm not trying to be unkind. What the hell are you doing then, buddy? I'm just being honest. Oh. When I tell you that Satan is getting into everything nowadays, no Christ-honoring Christians had listened to the music of Dolly Parton, or Johnny Cash, or any other entertainer who promotes Satan. What's he talking about? Is he talking about this? Granted, it's not a Christmas song, but is he talking about this? Now, I don't think it's this.
Your own personal Jesus. Someone to hear your prayers. Someone who cares. Your own personal.
No, I don't think it's that. Wow, just juxtapose that with this. Same song.
Personal Jesus.
and both of them genius in their own right. Just to give you an idea of the, I just wanted you to know what that's. Of course, this guy goes on to explain that Santa and Satan use the same words and their same letters. Santa is evil. Santa Claus is wicked. Santa is of the devil. Do you ever stop to realize that Santa Claus is a clone of Lord Jesus, intended to replace Jesus in the minds of little children? Just as Jesus knows all, so does Santa. What? There's no hope for these people. Singing Christmas praises to Satan. Oh, Christmas tree, oh, Christmas tree. If you can't see what's wrong with that above song, you certainly need to get right with God. At Christmas time, the world sings praises to decorated pine trees. Few people realize. I promise I'm not making this up. Santa rearranged spell Satan. This is no coincidence! No, I guess not, but with that in mind, I can't help but share with you a little something from the Internet's most brilliant satirist and, frankly, just most widely read man that I know. And that's Eugene Finnerman over at FinnermanWorks.com, FinnermanWorks.com, FinnermanWorks.com. Season's Bleedings, that's B-L-E-A-T-I-N-G-S, in case my diction is something less than perfect. Season's Bleatings. 1,000 years ago, the children of Scandinavia looked up to the sky, awaiting the arrival of a jolly, boisterous spirit and his animal-drawn cart. If the children had been good, they would be rewarded with weapons and attack plans for the British Isles. Thor and his goat cart would eventually be replaced by a migrant deity willing to work longer hours, deal with diseases, and the other drudgery that no self-respecting Aesir would touch. Yet Swedes still celebrate the Christmas season with little straw goats, a symbol of their former theology. Perhaps in Scandinavian nativity scenes, the Virgin Mother is wearing a breastplate and a horned helmet. Little, but that's all cultures do something like that around the solstice. Whether it was the Romans and their Saturnalia, or the Scandinavians and Thor and his magic animal cart. Huh? You know, he really did have to have that. The one guy who can get away with a sleigh and he gets an animal cart. He was due for an upgrade. But no, the fundamentalists can't understand that. They can't understand that at all. Thanks, Eugene. Not even a little bit can they understand that. No, they're utterly baffled by, among other things, the announcement of an extraordinary discovery of a group of Stone Age artworks in Russia, 21,000 to 22,000 years old, of Venus figurines. The figurines are obviously pregnant females, and they are beautiful of their sort. These figurines were carefully buried in pits and covered with mammoth bones. Mammoth bones. 21 to 22,000 year old mammoth bones. And since the figurines were below the mammoth bones, and there was no geological evidence to suggest any sort of syncline or anticline that forced to put the figurines and the bones stayed on top. No. That means that the figurines underneath are at least as old as the mammoth bones. And of course, we all know what carbon 16 dating is. Carbon 16 decays at a set rate. And by measuring the rate of decay versus a thing that is living now, because carbon 16 stops being produced when the thing stops, when the living thing stops being alive, whether it's a tree or a mammoth or a person, no more carbon 16. And because the decay of the rate of decay is uniform, you can tell how old something is, like mammoth bones that are 21,000 years old. But the fundamentalist literalist goobers have to write those guys off.
Put there by the devil to confound the unbelievers. Oh, glory.
Nothing in nobody. And then after slaying David, did the young David get upon his woolly mammoth and ride away, yea, verily, from Dan to Beersheba?
It ain't there. It just isn't there.
But if the world's just 6,000 years old, the woolly mammoths kind of had to be. I mean, you know, David was a hunter. He's out there killing lions, and there's Samson just slobber knocking people with the jawbone of an ass. Imagine what Samson could have done if he'd had a woolly mammoth tusk instead of the jawbone of an ass. He could have laid about him. And if the fundamentalist literalists are right, they would have kind of had to been there. But these are beautiful things. And you see these carvings, and even though they're 21,000 years old, how can you not feel a sense of love for the person, or persons, who, working with stone tools, crafted these amazing, amazing little objects?
Now, Bob, you know, they probably crafted them right before they killed the sacrificial victim they put in it.
I understand all that. But merciful heaven, it's such a struggle to stay human. It's such a struggle to keep humans from eliminating themselves from the planet. I don't like cockroaches at all. And I'm not ready to give up and let them have it. Let's take the one last chance we got to fix what we've got and save what we've got. Because you know what? Those things are in under a pile of mammoth bones from 21,000 years ago, somewhere off in frozen Russia. But you know what? You, me, we, sitting here today, someday we'll be the culture that's being talked about and wondered over. And I hope, I dare hope, that if someone ever digs up a little something that was yours or mine, that they'll take just a moment to imagine themselves into our world and know that just like them and just like these, that we knew love and pain and yearning and desire, that we knew unspeakable gladness, the bliss that comes with the birth of a new child, the nervousness that comes with watching that child take its first steps, the joy of seeing a community come around and help that child live to adulthood. Someday they'll say that about us. But only if there is a planet fit for human habitation that they can live on, and have the opportunity to contemplate us. Not as heroes. Not as mythic figures. not as somehow favored by some invisible God critter, but as just us, just people, human beings in an unbroken chain over the millennia, all pretty much doing the same thing. And the only question being the accents. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening, Bob.
Hey, Ed.
How's it going?
Oh, I'm having fun.
That sounds like you are. I may be in that next time of people. They won't be any Republicans. Now, we don't need to go to heaven if ain't none of them.
Well, you know, Jesus said the poor you have always with you. I got a feeling they didn't write down everything, because I got a feeling the next sentence was, and the jackasses too.
Mm-hmm. But I just wonder, you know, this one morning this week, I picked up, like I told you before, I sleep in as late as you do, but I picked up some of the talk on prevailing wage and so forth, which, you know, that this idiot of the morning that's on this, got this show, Steve O'Brien, is against a prevailing wage. He's against a minimum wage. And if they had their way, you would be working for $2 an hour.
That much?
Well, maybe, if you were lucky. He believes, his theory is, if you can get him to work for nothing, do it. You know, and thank goodness the blacks have overcome that slave day. But I just wanted to bring up that on something he said. And you got these bunch of nuts that call in there. You know, I told you before, the good name for them is the Dirty Dozen. And I guarantee you, it's like O'Tari over there. He's on, with the Chamber of Commerce and on the got land.
Yeah,
there.
I know.
I
know.
I can't remember his first name.
Probably better off that we don't mention it.
Okay, but anyway, he was so interested in this land that ties into mine out here that Rolling Rivers bought.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they can't develop it now.
Well, isn't that the people doing that develop? Aren't they on the verge of bankruptcy now?
Well, I don't know. I'm going to make them an offer on some land down here behind my house that already ties into mine. See what I can do. But they can't even dig septic places. That place is so rocky.
It won't perk.
They've only got maybe 20 good acres there, and all of it's tied into other people's land. But, you know, I asked him, you know, where he was getting so nosy and aggressive and we was killing progress, I asked him what he was doing, was selling light bulbs to him or something, and come to find out he's a real estate guy.
Yes, he is.
So, that, you know, every time that you find one of them nosing in, they've got a interest in whatever's going on financially or to promote their own business. Every time. And the thing I don't like about them is they know everything. And, you know, they had a girl named Mary, I think it was Mary Lou, I'm not sure about that middle name, but her first name is Mary. They had her making excuses because she voted mostly Democrat.
I remember Mary Lou, and she was a wonderful, wonderful human being, and God bless her for the Democrat that she is.
I wish I knew her number. I'd call her and ask her what's wrong with her that you would cave in to a bunch of idiots like that. It's none of their business how you vote, and I wouldn't get on there and tell them and give them leeway to come back at you. But that just burns me up to hear, you know, and that's one thing the Republicans are good for, is to cram something down your throat when you ain't hungry for it.
And and what you just described is a classic case of how it is. You know, I said on the show the other evening that we sort of had to do this after I left Beckley because there's so many of us, you know, in other parts of the country, you can maybe turn on the radio and hear a liberal or a progressive once in a while. Not here, by God, not here.
Not
no,
West
sir.
Virginia that I know of.
Well, you can get a little bit down in Huntington. That's about the, and the sort of maybe kind of, yeah, up in like Weirton, Wheeling.
Well, I can't pick up those.
You can't get either one of them because they're both flickering candle flames compared to a blowtorch like, well, you know, the 5,000 watts that that's there in Beckley or the blaster that's in Charleston. No, you can't pick it up, and that's the only way a right winger or a pig licking can succeed in an argument, Ed, is to argue with an empty room. And when you don't, and when you don't have any liberals, you don't have any progressives, you don't have anybody from the reasonable, rational side of the political spectrum, then everything they say sounds like perfect sense. And that's the only way, Ed, the only way. And I'm not trying to beat on anything. The only way that they can carry on a conversation about where this country's going. Because if you oppose them, then everything they're saying turns into a house of cards. Whether it's the, you know, well, let Detroit go belly up. Let Detroit. How can these right-wingers, how can they sit there and say that they want to see 3 million Americans out of work?
Yeah.
Gone.
I think the very least, though, that the people that's done that should be fired. You know, the heads of the...
Oh, yeah. Look. Well, you know, Mark Levine mentioned on the previous show, which I know you didn't hear. These right-wing idiots are out there saying that the UMWA should... not UMWA, the UAW. The UAW should give up its strike fund.
Like,
and fold, you know, that in, and fold that,
that, that takes the weapon.
Sure it does. And fold that into the Detroit bailout. And yet, as Mark noted, you take the 30 or 40 executives, highest paid executives in Detroit, and it's not a $1 billion fund. Then it's multiple billions of dollars. Now, how many UAW members are there, you reckon? A few thousand?
I don't think there's more than 400,000 left.
Right. But it takes all of them to put together a $1 billion strike fund. On the other hand, however, it only takes 20 or 30 Detroit executives to put together billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is all bass ackwards. We're going to ask working people to give up before any of these creeps that run the operation have sacrificed anything? I don't think so.
No. And the thing of it is, those strike funds come out of part of our union dues.
Sure they do.
And one time when they nearly broke us when one of the big plants struck, we had to borrow millions off of the Teamsters. I don't know, you're probably too young to remember that, but it might have been like $100 million. That they were going to loan us, but when they come up with that ended the strike. So that shows you how lethal that strike fund is. And I know when I was in there and we struck once, we got about $140 a week, plus they wouldn't let your power be turned off. I don't know. I don't have any idea how it works now because I've been out of it since 1980. But I do know that strike fund was the secret weapon, so to speak. So I hope UAW is smart enough. But they're negotiating on getting up stuff now. And like the COLA, cost of living for retirees, and stuff like that. You know, it's funny how fast union leaders, and I know that's the only weapon we got, fight with, and I know they seem overly anxious to help the ones that's put the screws to them. The ones they had to fight to get where they are, they're willing to give part of it back. And that's the only thing I got. If they're going to do something, bail out, you know, let them bail it out if they're going to, but don't ask the union to give up all of what they've got. And I would be for a 35 and out. You know, I think that's a fair thing. But some of the other stuff they're asking, I want to see what the guy does. to tell you the truth, I've never heard of him. And I knew everybody on the way up in that union when I was with them. But O'Brien them talks this stuff about small contractors. If we got rid of this prevailing wage, then the contractors, small contractors, could survive. Do you know how that works, Bob?
Sure I do. Yes, I do.
That if the prevailing wage, and it just as an example, is $35 an hour for those contractors, these small contractors are going to move in and charge $28 and still pay those workers $8 or $9. Now, that's how that deal goes. That's one way.
There. Sure it is. Look, the home building contractors who hire their crews out of the Lowe's or Home Depot parking lot every morning, you know, because it's immigrant labor, and they pay them, you know, $4 or $5 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And don't pay any workers' comp, don't pay any anything. Well, you know what? That doesn't enable them to hire more workers. That enables them to buy more stuff and
right.
to enrich themselves.
And the people, like, worked over at one of the golf courses in Beckley. That's all they had in there was, I don't know whether they were legal or illegal, but they didn't pay them poor guys, and they couldn't fight back. It's like the coal operators wanted to hire people that couldn't speak English. How in the heck are they going to know what, if they don't understand English, what the other guys are making? And it's the same thing with those guys. They were working for nothing, and I felt so sorry for them. They were out there, sweat dripping off of them without a shirt on, working their rear end off, and then when they get off from work, they big two carloads of van, like in two vans, like we saw going to Connecticut. We stopped somewhere in Pennsylvania. Two carloads of them unloaded a big stack of bologna and some bread, and eight or ten of them went in one room. And there was only two beds.
Yeah.
So you know what they were doing, and, you know, to conserve their money or to utilize.
Sleep two to three to a bed, sleep under the sink, sleep on the floor by the TV, under the window, wherever there's an open space.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? What gets me, and I'd like to tell it, and I promise you, Bob, if I ever run into that guy on the golf course, I'm going to tell him now, you can't hang up on me now, but I can hang it on you. And I'm going to tell him, you know what, if it wasn't for your wife, you couldn't even smoke and drink like you do. Because we both know what he makes. And as far as I know, he's never sold a piece of land. If he has, you never hear about it. But I'd like to tell him, you know, some guys live behind a woman's skirts all their lives, and you're one of them. You know, what does he work, 15 hours a week at $10, $10 or $11 an hour? That don't buy cigarettes and booze that he drinks.
Not much of it.
He's a damn disgrace to, you know, and they.
But they've got to have him there. They've absolutely got to have him there. Because we're not talking about people. We're not talking about people. And this is the case in a lot of terrestrial radio, not just small market Beckley, the fifth smallest radio market on Earth or in America. It's what happens when ideologues control the airwaves. These are supposed to be the public airwaves. They are not. They are corporatized airwaves. And it doesn't matter if a station's ratings triple when a liberal's on it. He's ideologically wrong.
Sir?
It doesn't matter if the ratings triple, if the guy's ideologically wrong, he's out the door.
And if you're right, then you don't get to stay on there very long. He'll cut you off. He don't always hang up, but he can see where you're going, and he'll say, well, thanks for the call. And that's the way he's cut Wayne off, and that's, you know, he's cut. I never will forget the guy named Chris. He reminded me of your knowledge. I mean, and he was really hanging it on around old Steve's neck. And the guy's never, as far as I know, but I don't listen to all of his program either. But That's the only guy that they've had on there that had half sense. But until we get guys like you and
well, don't say until, Ed. There ain't going to be no until. There's simply not going to be an until, because they own the license, they own the station, they own the airwaves, and they are not going to put the other side on there.
Well,
because they are ideologues.
I thought there was a law that there had to be some kind of equality.
No, there's not. That's what we're talking about.
Fair hickey, whatever they call it.
Fairness doctrine? No. That guy, Ronald Reagan, killed that.
Yeah, but that don't mean it can't be revived. But the stuff, if people don't listen to that and counter it, even if it's through your program, which I take my animosity out with you, and to let the people know, because you've got listeners here in this state that don't call in and that feel the same way I do, but they, for one reason or another, whether it's nerves or just not maybe able to get on there for one reason or another, and express what these idiots that call in there. I never heard such a bunch of junk. Now, and you know what? They got nerve enough to start questioning Obama before he even gets in office on what he's doing. Why? But you start talking about George Bush, and right away they holler, oh, that was a Congress.
Ed, did you get a chance to see Countdown, Keith Olbermann's show last night?
No, I turned it across there, and they already had that woman on. I can't remember her name.
Rachel Maddow.
They already had her on there.
Well, Dem leader, George W., did an interview with Charlie Gibson. And Olbermann ran excerpts of it during his show last night. I watched it on the Internet. And it's disgraceful. The man sat there, Ed, and said that, well, nothing he'd done during his presidency was his fault. That everything that was happening with the economy was happening 10 years before he got into office.
God.
10 years before he got into office, his daddy was president.
Yeah. Well, so it really started with the Bush, and then it took Clinton's to clean that up, and now he's including the Clinton administration. But what do you expect out of a lying coward like him?
Well, I had an email. It was just I had an email regarding that segment, and the person writing, our buddy David in Tennessee, referred to George now as a rusted little hood ornament. And that's all he is. That's all he's ever been. He's never been a president. He's never been any kind of a leader. He's nothing but a hood ornament.
Yeah. Well, I don't even give him that much credit. He didn't like much becoming a monkey. And let me read you this, and I might have already. More and more of our imports come from overseas. Like a man that will say that.
Oh, Lord, there's a million of them. There are a million of them, Ed. What's one of those favorites? Is anybody out there asking, is our kids learning?
Oh, God.
If you give a child a test, him or her, you will find out if him or her is learning. And there was one of those in this interview that they're still rolling out of his mouth. I swear, Ed, in your time, you've known people who were into the bottle. This guy's wasted.
Yeah.
I mean, just watching the video of that interview, you could, he was just sort of somewhere else, slurring a little bit and barely speaking English, Ed.
Yeah. Well. And he gets on there with that smirk. That's when a person feels like they just like to slap his mouth till it swelled out like a bicycle in her tube. But let me tell you, I got a keychain here says 01 period 20 period 09, Bush's last day. And it's a little computer thing. It says 47 days, 3 hours, 6 minutes, and 58 seconds. You know, it keeps exactly.
Yeah, we've got a countdown. We've got a countdown in the chat room on the internet too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My son-in-law knows how much I despise him, and he sent me this, and he's always calling me, telling me that Bush may, by hook or crook, get back in, you know, just to gouge him. But he sent me this, and I really appreciate everybody that sees it comments on it. But George Bush is a damn disgrace to the human race. He really is.
And that's why, Ed, when I feel the urge to criticize some of these appointments, or at least talk about who the appointments are, I feel a little bad about it because, frankly, there's the list of people that Barack Obama could appoint to any sort of cabinet position who would be worse than anything that George Bush has ever appointed is so slim, so narrow as to be almost impossible. You know, people want to criticize Hillary Clinton, him for appointing Hillary Clinton Secretary of State. Damn, look what you're losing. Look what's going away. You're telling me that Condoleezza, not you, but that Condoleezza Rice is a better Secretary of State than Hillary Clinton? Really? I mean, it astonishes me. And, you know, that's not stuff coming from right-wingers. That's stuff coming from our side, Ed.
Yep. They're not our side. They're not my side. They went for third base before they went to first. But I am just astonished at how these Republicans get on there, these right-wing nuts that you call them, get on the radio and try to tell somebody how bad that Obama's going to do when they've got George Bush looking them in the face. How can they?
And see, that's how you fight it. But you can't fight that as long as the other side controls the airwaves.
Yeah, but Mel said they couldn't do that. I said, the hell they ain't. They're doing it. They're doing it. Anybody that old Steve can attack anybody on any level or cut them off, and it's okay. But Mel's argument is that he's got a right to those airways. I just said, well, we need to tell him that. And who do you go to show him that you got a right to get on that station as well as those right-wingers?
Virtually no one.
I know you don't. I know you don't have the right to do it. And I'm not going to kiss his hind end to get on there either.
Well, I say it time and again, Ed, and I don't apply this just to that right-wing creep in Beckley. And I know there are people who differ with me on this, but this is simply the way that, based on my understanding of right-wing media, Ed, the best thing in the world to do is let those people flap in the breeze. All right? Let them read the newspaper. If the phone doesn't ring for them, they're dead.
Well, it's very seldom I call, but I do listen so that at least I can get on your program and have it heard. Because, like I said, you've got a large audience and a large area, but you also got quite a few people that listen here that don't call in, but they still listen.
True.
So,
true that.
But I wanted to mention one other thing if I hadn't. This statement he makes that everybody's got health care, you're talking about having his head need be yanked out of his hind end. That's unbelievable. You know, and if we got health care like that, somebody's paying for it. it's the people that's got the health coverage that's paying for that. So we're still paying a lot more for people that like uninsured motorists. You know, we have to pay for that. So they're going to collect their money some way, and him to make a statement that is that ignorant, he needs his head stuck in a daggone chipmunk's hole.
Well, that would you could fit his brain in one, but you could fit his brain in one, Ed, without even trying.
Hell, you could drop his brain in one and it wouldn't hit either side. But anyway, I just wanted to flush some of my
That's what we're here for, man.
My anger's out at what is going on in this world, and where are people that is supposed to have common sense and something to think with? Where are they?
Well, a lot of them are right here, Ed.
Well, we certainly got them here, and you know, jobs. That's just like the stuff you guys are fighting and that a bunch of us are against, this mountaintop removal. And who is willing to step out there and even sign a petition?
And well, you know, we had a rally in Charleston back in September, and we presented a representative of the governor with a notebook filled with 10,000 signatures, Ed, on a petition trying to get Coal River Mountain saved, so that we can put windmills on it instead of blowing it up and actually provide some meaningful work for West Virginians. That's a bunch.
Well, you're dealing with another damn Shirley Love or a Republican, ever which way you want to. Shirley Love calls herself now a conservative Democrat. What a joke. Damn, I'd laugh myself, but it didn't hurt so bad.
Hey, Ed, you take care. You want me to put you on hold?
Sure.
All right. We'll talk to you soon, all right?
Thank you. Thank you for the conversation.
Oh, gosh almighty, it's my pleasure. Anytime, Ed.
Okay.
Stand by. I love hearing from Ed. Hey, welcome to the program.
I would like to give respect to the Republicans for something that no one is talking about, by the way, Bob.
Okay, you can try, David.
No, I'm not going to try. It is a fact. It is a fact.
All right. Now I'm thoroughly teased. This I got to hear.
Okay. It's important because it's where you have to give respect. There was a time where a musician was in jail, and his name was John Forte, and he was part of the refugee crew, and I was part of Wyclef's group.
Yeah. Okay.
And they had a hit, Staying Alive, and then shortly after he released an album. But during that time, he had made a trip to the airport, and allegedly he had got caught with liquid cocaine in his suitcase.
Ooh.
Yes. Now this is where it gets interesting, and this is where I tell people that it's what I call the genie of unintended consequences. You can't get rid of the Republicans because this is a prime example why you can't. The liquid cocaine in his suitcase, he had no contest with it. He couldn't really have a fair trial. He immediately sent to jail for 7 years. If you go to his blog, which I will say this, and I have said it before on this program before, it's one of the most eloquent blogs on all of the web. He blogged from jail. It was freejohnforte.com.
Okay.
And but here's the amazing thing about it. His friend, who wrote letter after letter, turned out to be Carly Simon. And she wrote letter to all the Democrats. I want people to listen to this right now. All of the Democrats she wrote to. And she said, please, help my friend John out of jail. I don't think he even knew what was in the suitcase. This is a stupid rule. He's been in there for 7 years. He just wants to be with his family, and he's a productive member of society. No one listened to him, Bob. All the letters were rejected because they just said, cocaine. Because I'll tell you this right now. The Democrats are cowards. But there was one person, the oddest person of them all, listened. And he took that letter to heart, and he said to Carly Simon, he said, I'm going to do something about this because this sounds funny to me. And because of this person's action, this Republican that a lot of people on this station loathe, John Forte is going to spend this Christmas 7 years in jail and blogging about his experience his family. That Republican is Mr. Orrin Hatch. I give Orrin Hatch all of the respect in the world for doing this simple act. He can do whatever he wants for the rest of his life. The fact remains this. If Orrin Hatch wasn't there, John Forte wouldn't be free. And he's on the pardon list right now because of Mr. Orrin Hatch. You guys can look it up if you want. Not lying to you. It's the truth. And it's what I try to get through people's heads, Bob. You remove the Republicans. If this is what you want to do, you're going to have this little guy come up, and he'll be called the genie of unintended consequences. If you removed all of them, John Forte would still be in jail to this day. No one would touch him. You know why? Because Democrats are cowards. They didn't touch the liquid cocaine issue. No one did. Orrin Hatch was the one person that said, this is bullshit. I'm going to do something about it. And he did. And he put it on the pardon list. And that's why he deserves props.
Now, but I want to be clear about this.
Yes.
He's not out yet.
He'll be out in December.
Okay. Okay.
He'll be out in December.
So the pardon has been issued.
Yes. And it's because of Orrin Hatch who put it on top of the list. He wouldn't have been even nowhere close.
Now, not to be just contrary for contrariness' sake, David.
Yes.
That's an individualized issue. I mean, that's the right decision on an individual basis, ad hoc, if you will.
Yes, but what I'm.
But the Republicans out there, and to a certain extent the Democrats, because you know the war on drugs, the BS that thing is drowning in, is bipartisan stupidity. And what you mentioned about cowardice is absolutely true. It is absolutely true.
But what I'm getting to is a broader issue. The people that you hate the most, not you, but the people that I read constantly, all these op-eds, you never know who's going to come out to help you. And it doesn't matter if it's political or not. What I'm saying to people right now is John Forte spent 7 years of his life, and he had another 7 years on his sentence, and no one was going to touch him. All of the letters that Carly Simon sent to all the Democratic congressmen and senators went in the circular file because they were so afraid of that liquid cocaine charge. Orrin Hatch was not. That's my main point. And that says something, Bob. That says something.
It does say
so
something. Among other things, Orrin Hatch is one of those folks who could get caught with either a dead girl or a live boy and would still be reelected. He is politically safe. And
I know, but it says something about his integrity that he actually listened to, and he said, hey, there's this guy named John Forte, and the fact that he actually responded back. And I think he did because he was a musician. But
that might be it.
Well, regardless of what the situation is, what I'm telling you is just because of someone's political beliefs and just because of someone's political ideology doesn't make them a scum of the earth. And this is a prime example. And
scum of the earth comes from scummy behavior, David.
I know, Bob, but people make, there are people who have what I would call a lair. Okay, that layer of that worldview. But once you peel back that layer of the worldview, that's how they were raised. That's how it was distorted. But again, what I'm saying is the broader issue is if Orrin Hatch wasn't there, every single request would be put in the circular file. So what I'm saying is.
Well, to be honest,
there's a reason for people there.
I saw George Bush's first pardon list.
Yeah.
And there were a bunch of drug criminals on there, for lack of a better term, drug convicts. Okay. People convicted of drug charges, drug related offenses. And frankly, if you ask me, I think there's a little bit of
there's a little bit of recognition and maybe mercy with regard to some of that from George Bush, if you want to ascribe that to him, because he himself has had a profound cocaine problem. We know this to be a fact. You know, maybe we've taken a step forward, David, in electing Barack Obama, if for no other reason than instead of saying, well, I didn't inhale, or I'm not going to talk about my misspent youth. Barack Obama came right out and said, yep, tried it. Would have killed me if I'd stuck with it. And that, I don't think anybody appreciates exactly what a profound step forward that is. Because the right wing, and it is predominantly the right wing with some left wing help, pushes this notion that if you've ever had a DUI, if you've ever gotten busted for a bag of pot, if you've ever done anything that deviates from the middle of the social road, that you are damaged goods and cannot be trusted doing anything. And that's we're selling a lot of talent and a lot of brains down the river with that kind of an attitude. Don't you think?
I completely agree, and I think one thing to take away from this is the fact that that's how badly tainted the whole Democratic Party is, that someone was not even afraid to answer the letter that.
And just for clarification purposes, when you say liquid cocaine, you're basically talking about injectable cocaine.
I'm not really clear on the. I just know the charges that he was sent.
I mean, can't snort it. Hard to smoke.
Yeah.
It's got to be. It's got to be an injectable form.
Okay, well, then it's probably injectable. But what I'm saying is, it says something when you have someone like Carly Simon who was reaching out to all.
Yeah, and did he maintain his innocence the whole time?
You know, that's an interesting thing too. I would suggest people reading up on this story because it is very intriguing. It doesn't make sense exactly why he was carrying it. He's a classically trained musician. It looks like someone could have planted it on him. He's not able to talk about it, but I guess he's going to talk about it when he's released before Christmas. Probably sometime next year. I'm sure a lot of the movie rights will come into the picture as well. I guess Carly Simon is an old friend at Martha's Vineyard, where I used to go out and have jam sessions with her and all the other musicians at her studio. And it's an interesting story, and it's
Lord knows he wouldn't be the first musician to have a drug problem.
Well,
you know, I know you're familiar with him too. Anyone who wants to take the probably most interesting view of all this, there's a great, you know, because we reverence Bill Hicks on this program. Bill Hicks had a beautiful take on that.
Well, there is the tie, and this isn't stereotyping Haitians, but Wyclef was involved with a guy named Haitian Jack, who was a manager and did have some criminal ties, and that was a tie to the refugee camp. So,
well, you know, why is it?
There might be something.
Why is
where they planted the drugs on him?
Well, it certainly could be, and it's also part and parcel, David, of the fact that our drug policy, as has been demonstrated empirically, time after time after time after time. It is hopelessly inequitable toward persons of color.
Yeah.
White kid, bag of powder cocaine, does not do half the time that a person of color with a $10 rock of crack in their pocket does.
Yeah.
And it can be roughly the equivalent amount. The person of color does the hard time. And George Bush or Noel Bush. Remember when Noel Bush was busted inside rehab for skiing on her nose?
Oh yeah.
And Jebby came out and said, "This is a personal family matter." I remember that.
It is kind of interesting, the fact that I wonder what would happen if Lindsay Lohan or Amy Winehouse got...
Well, shoot, there's video out there of Lindsay Lohan snorting it up in the bathroom.
Yeah, but I think the main reason they got him was because of how many, I don't know how many kilos or what. How many
quantity, yeah, sure.
Yeah, quantity he was carrying, and it was regarding...
Milliliters or, yeah.
So. Caught in an airport or something, it was a seize or whatever.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're walking around with an old 2-liter 7-Up bottle full of liquid cocaine,
yeah,
that ain't personal use.
Yeah, I tend to think that this was trafficking, and he was either coerced into it,
or used as an unwitting mule.
Yeah, or used as an unwitting mule because of this manager, a Haitian Jack. He might have bent his arm and threatened his family or something. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of crazy thing going on with usually with the Haitian Jack. It goes back to the Tupac and...
Well, more than anything else, this, you know, 7 years? 7 years? 5 years? Shoot.
7 years.
Well, I'll get into it later, maybe. I don't know. Okay, I'm getting a little clarification here. Cindy out in the Great Northwest says the musician Forte is a friend of Carly Simon's son. So, there, you know, that's where the connection comes from. She doesn't see much merit in the pardon and doesn't give a damn about Carly Simon or, you know, whatever. I personally don't think that, and see, this issue isn't restricted, David, to a notable musician.
Oh, no.
Here in our local rag of a newspaper, there was a story today that the incoming prosecutor, a woman by the name of Kristen Keller, has decided that she is going to move heaven and earth to stop an experimental project called the Drug Court.
Mm.
And what this is it's a diversion program for non-violent drug offenders, all right? And it's the same old sickening rhetoric. Didn't Billie Holiday die handcuffed to her bed?
Yeah.
Over a drug charge. Am I wrong on that?
I think you might be right.
I think I am. So Kristen Keller is the prosecutor-elect, and she wants to make sure everybody knows she's tough on crime. All right? So she's opposing this special drug court that has alternative sentencing instead that's designed to, you know, put people into society under a very structured, supervised situation to help them get over their drug problems, instead of just crowding up our jails with them and basically breaking the bank, imprisoning people who committed crimes that didn't have any victims. And I mean, just dig this quote.
There's not a uniform belief that the therapeutic approach to criminal behavior is the appropriate approach or the approach that people who are victimized by criminals would appreciate. I don't think the answer to criminal behavior is in letting criminals believe, even more so now that we all exist to be their therapists.
Stupid twit. See, that, you know, that's the classic straw man. She doesn't want this program because she wants everybody, I'm tough on crime, you know, I'll put them all behind me. I'd shoot them if I could!
Yeah, there definitely needs to be some house cleaning within the prisons. We need to at least cut that in half of people who are currently incarcerated. I would say the first 10 years.
Well, what was that statistic from a year or so ago? Maybe 2 years now. This nation has 1% of its population under lock and key. Actually, more than 1%.
Mm.
It's astonishing.
One last thing that I wanted to mention,
sure,
before I move on to the callers. I wanted to ask you about the... I sent you an email regarding the awards, the God Bold. I don't know if you read that.
Oh yes, I did. I did read that, and I think I forwarded that along to Peter, and I haven't heard anything back.
I'll check my scent box.
Could it be related to? Is that an area that?
I don't know. I don't know. You know, I think, I don't want to speak for him, but I think Peter's family was in North Florida for quite some time. You know, he's a real live, honest-to-goodness Florida native.
Right.
But, you know, that's not a name like Smith or Jones. If you ran across it, yeah, I hope, I know Peter's been having internet problems again, among other things. You know, he's got that two tin cans and a string internet provider. And it's just driving him mad.
My dad has worse problems than him because he lives way out in the country and they can't get build for a broadband or.
Oh, they're not even going to try to provision. Oh, that's disgusting.
I mean, they're not even going to do it. I mean, he doesn't want to pay for cable because it would just cost an arm and a leg just to do it. Because I guess one of the problems that he did was he moved the property way out, like 100 feet off the road. So there's a complication there of getting the proper internet service. Hopefully, when quantum computing gets into full effect, which will probably be 100 years from now, but hopefully that'll change things. I did want to mention.
Well, I hope the Obama administration is going to address some of this stuff. You know, we need back when FDR was president, they were. Saying that you know the power company, it's not cost effective for us to bring electricity out to those people in the country. And the FDR administration said, okay, that's fine. We'll just create the Rural Electrification Act, and it was passed through Congress to provide electricity to rural areas. And we need something like that with broadband, really meaningful broadband too, by the way. Not the stuff that we call broadband in the United States is damn near dial-up in some parts of Japan and Europe. But we needed to, you know, I hope the Obama administration will find time for some of that too. There have been tons of grants administered through the United States Department of Agriculture, oddly enough.
Hartman was talking about how today that all of these problems that we have in all of these areas. This is our opportunity to rebuild America in the image that we want it to be. And I agree with them to a little bit, an extent of that, but I just don't. I see so many roadblocks of people who are going to try to stop that progress.
Well, Tom's right in that regard. It is a chance to build the America that we want.
Yeah.
But anybody who thinks that just because there's a Democratic majority in both houses of Congress that constitutes some sort of look, as long as the Senate contains Ben and Bill Nelson, especially Ben Nelson from Nebraska,
yeah,
good God, that man is he's not a conservative Democrat, he's a wolf in sheep's clothing. That guy voted with the Republicans as much as or more than he voted with his own party. I mean, we talk a lot about Lieberman, and Lieberman is a slug and a sleazebag.
Mm.
But Ben Nelson, you know, I guess just because he's out there in the middle of Nebraska that nobody thinks. But you can't count. I wouldn't trust the man with a dead skunk in his hands. But he's a Democrat. And the question is, will enough pressure be applied to him by Harry Reid to make him go along with the majority to get stuff done? You know, I want the Employees Free Choice Act so bad I can taste it. But I, you know, there's a lot. There are probably more than a handful of Democrats in the Senate who are more than willing to side with the Republicans to stop it. And I can only hope that the people who are in charge of pushing this bill through have identified those individuals and, I don't know, have pictures of them doing nasty things to farm animals.
Well, the only thing I can say about people complaining about this administration, I would say it like this. You have to think of this administration like a tutorial. You can look at this administration and see what they're doing wrong and see what they're doing right. And then that's where you build the infrastructure when it comes to liberal and progressive policies. But it's good to have an administration like this. Here, this is the way I look at it. I look at it as a different side. It's better to have this than just to rush all of the liberals in at once and everyone say, we're going to do this, 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 and just put it all on the pile, and just everything, it's like I say, the genie of unintended consequences. Everything that you dream about, but there's always going to be that catch that comes with it. So it's better to see an administration that's, I guess you want to call it moderate, centrist, whatever you want to call it. It's better to see that because it's going to help you be stronger in the end.
Yeah. I encourage everybody to read up on the Overton window. I was just fascinated when I read about it. I saw it referenced on one of my daily forays over to BartCop.com. I think, you know, maybe 2-3 issues back there's mention of it. And it's well worth studying because it's the people on the so-called, well, the Republicans never did anything, David, to slow down, shut up, or otherwise muzzle their hardcore far end of the right wing because they understood this principle.
Mm.
That the people on the far end of the spectrum are the ones who make the center a place that can be inhabited and can, in fact, move that center in the direction the party wants to go. So, you know, I hope we're figuring it out as well. Because it's a continuum that it's a horizontal line, not a vertical one, and it doesn't waveform or anything. It's a straight line and it goes left to right. And this seems to me a very, very valid political theory. So I hope folks will read up on it.
Yeah, you have to look at this administration as a navigational tool to help you in the next phase. And
sure.
This is what it has to be.
And the other side never takes a day off. Look, Saxby Chambliss won in Georgia last night. What do I see the next day?
Yeah.
It was all because of Sarah Palin, obviously the rising star of the Republican Party.
Huh? In Georgia? Now, if Sarah Palin had gotten a Republican senator elected in, oh, what, New York or Massachusetts, then I'd be... No, Jim Martin had an uphill climb to begin with.
Yeah.
He had to win in the general election because all the people who voted for people for the Overton window, the people who voted for people further right than Saxby Chambliss came right home to Saxby Chambliss. So it's worth considering.
It is one of those things you have to think about.
It is. David, good to hear from you, buddy.
No problem, Bob.
And by the way, I listened to that other link you sent, and yeah, it was what you said.
Oh, the Colin Moreau stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's good.
He's very good. All right, you take care.
All right, later.
Bye now.
Bye.
Email in from our pal Cindy. She says, I'm all for decriminalizing drugs. Putting addicts in jail is a waste of tax money, and so is the entire police, court, full employment act a disservice to our nation. I don't like all the aspects of the phony war on drugs, but I think pardons should be for people who are unjustifiably imprisoned by most people's thinking. It seems this guy is a spoiled rich party person. As such, I haven't much feeling for him. There's nothing in the Constitution that says that is the sole function of the pardon process. It is discretionary with the President of the United States. And the fact of the matter is, it's a political tool. And so if someone, if a president misuses it, theoretically there is a political price to pay. It remains to be seen, however, whether that price is paid. Maybe it was a political price to pay at the time that the Constitution was drafted, but it isn't now. It's just sort of hard to tell. Unjustifiably unfair trials. Carla Faye Tucker might have liked to have a pardon, don't you reckon? Instead, George Bush giggled about the fact that he was ordering her to be killed. Yeah, really. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, what's happening?
Oh, same old, man. I've been, you know, listening a little bit and feeding my grandson. I thought I had him asleep, but that didn't work.
They can be very stealthy about going to sleep, can't they?
Yeah. But listen, I have the solution to all of these things.
Yes.
The Employees Free Choice Act, how to get it passed, how to get this country moving again, how to get the stimulus package moving again. Democrats got a shot here. You know, regardless of what happens with, okay, we lost in Alabama, you know, surprise, surprise. And, you know, even if we lose Minnesota, we have 58 senators.
Mm-hmm.
It is time for the nuclear option, which the Republicans threatened with us with daily.
Yes, they did. Yes, they
and
did.
I think that we have the mandate to do that.
And they didn't have 60. They didn't have 60 votes when they threatened it either, did they?
No, they did not. No, they did not. And you know, if I'm correct, the nuclear option is getting rid of the filibuster, which means all you need is a simple majority to pass legislation. Am I correct?
You are correct.
Okay. You know, we have an opportunity here, Democrats and this administration, to turn this country around. We do not have time to play games. But, you know, I mean, even if we had 60 seats, that does not guarantee that we're going to get the Employees Free Choice Act passed.
Because of the Ben Nelsons of the world.
Exactly. And exactly. So I say, you know, let's go in. I mean, we need a stimulus. It's time to be bold. It's time to, roll the dice, go for it all.
It's time to stop worrying about the current arrangement of the deck chairs on the Titanic and recognize that the Titanic has a great big hole in the hull.
That's exactly right. And the way to fix it is with a economic stimulus package. And you know that the yeller and screamer guy, what's his name, Cramer?
Oh, yeah.
Financial guy?
Yeah.
You know, I don't agree with anything he says, except for this, you know, the stimulus package and his thing. You know, he was not an Obama supporter. I mean, you know, I saw him a couple times on different shows and stuff, and I mean, you know, he was all scared to death that Obama would win because he'd ruin the stock market. You know, well, seems like George Bush and the Republicans have managed to do a pretty good job, and the people in Wall Street did a pretty good job of doing that all by themselves. But he says, if you're going to do a stimulus package, don't mess around. And he says, I don't want to hear $5 or $7 billion. I want to hear $2 trillion. And that's exactly what we should do. Do $500 or $600 billion this year, do $500 or $600 billion the year after. If Democrats play their cards right, by 2011, we could suspend a nuclear option because we'll have 68 senators instead of 58.
Yep.
And, you know, by the time, if Democrats govern correctly and get this country moving again, and I'm not just talking about jobs and financially, but restoring our moral standing in the world, which, you know, has already come a long way just by electing this gentleman.
Yes.
And
frankly, having people who are talking about Gitmo must be closed.
It has to be closed. It has to be closed.
Yeah, but no more dancing. It's been said.
Yes. Exactly.
And you're absolutely right, Wayne. That does go a long way. Let me back you up just for a minute, though, if I may.
Yes.
You talk about the nuclear option, and I'm in agreement. What was good for them is good for us. But the other thing that did play to our advantage is it was used as a threat, and it was used successfully as a threat. You got to remember, thanks to the threat of the nuclear option, we have on the court John Roberts and Samuel Alito, and on the lower courts a whole bunch of right-wing freaks that are going to be tormenting the legal system for 100 years, for the next generation, right?
Yes, they are.
Okay,
but,
so
you know, we also have a very good chance of turning that around.
Oh yeah. No, I'm not disagreeing with you. This is a strategic fine point, if you will. And that is this: I don't want any threats about the nuclear option.
No, I want it carried out.
I want somebody to walk into the Senate the minute that they say that they're going to filibuster the Employee Free Choice Act. You there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I don't either. But the minute they said the Republicans are, well, we'll filibuster the Employee Free Choice Act, the next step is for the next Democrat who gets to speak to stand up, do whatever procedurally has to be done, and introduce the motion right then, right there, to be voted on. That goes that brings the nuclear option, and no talk about it, no talking heads battling for 4 weeks, no time for Senator Byrd to start worrying about the majesty of the Senate and put together 14 mugwumps who'll stop anything from happening.
No, that's exactly right. It's time for bold moves.
Yeah,
and that's what we have to do. And I'm telling you that that's exactly what they should do, and I'm certainly going to encourage my senators to do that. We don't have time to play games. Legislation has to be passed, and it has to be passed quickly, and we have to get things going.
And gosh, I'm sorry, aw shucks, we couldn't get it done. We'll get her done next time.
I don't want to hear that anymore.
No.
I don't want to hear that anymore. You're going in here with 58 senators. I mean, how many? What the hell are our numbers in the House now? I mean, how many House seats did we get?
Oh, there's no. I mean, the Employee Free Choice Act will pass by a wide margin in the House.
Exactly. But I'm talking about other legislation also.
Yeah.
And if we do this correctly, hell, it'll be decades before the Republicans ever gain control again. Anyway, if they ever do, if we do things right. And, you know, it's at the point where it's worth the gamble. If you lose, well, you know, we're gone anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is the shot. And, you know, I don't care, you know, I mean, you know, that the center, America is still a center-right country. No, it isn't, and no, it never has
been. Never has been. There you go. Yeah.
Never has been. And, we could do this correctly. We could move this country and the world forward. And, like I said, the Republicans will remain the minority for an awful long time, as they should, as far as I'm concerned.
They make a lovely minority party, as far as I'm concerned.
And, you know, they have certainly proven that they can't govern.
Well, how could you? I got a story in the stack here, Wayne. I don't want to take you away from the topic. I got a story in the stack here from Kentucky. Have you seen this?
I don't know.
The Kentucky has a law that they have to put up a plaque that credits God with taking care of Kentucky's homeland security. The plaque posted at the Kentucky Emergency Operations Center in Frankfort, and this is by an act of the Kentucky legislature, says, "Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh but in vain." Now, that's why Republicans can't govern, Wayne.
No. That's certainly a money saver.
Don't even have to stab.
Yeah, God, we don't have to do anything. And, you know, if we get attacked, it's God's fault.
Yeah, blame him.
Or will, or what. Yeah,
yeah, and you know, the Chamber of Commerce is happy because you can't sue God.
No, you can't.
But that, you know, really, that's why they can't govern.
That's scary, isn't it?
That's terrifying.
My God.
Yeah, look, it's this on
did
a federal
Mitch
level.
McConnell
it's Harry.
Introduced that?
This, one of his little minions, I'm sure, did.
They did. I'm sure he was in, you know, he can't introduce it. He's a U.S. senator, but I'm sure he was behind it 100%.
No, actually, it's word-eating time, Wayne, for me. I apologize. Democratic State Representative Tom Reiner, a Baptist minister from Louisville, said he considers it vitally important to acknowledge God's role in protecting Kentucky and the nation. It ain't always the other side, but this is the kind of stuff that makes it impossible, makes it difficult to go. Terry Schiavo, for heaven's sakes, Terry Schiavo.
Has anybody pointed out to him that God didn't do too good a job on the Twin Towers?
He wasn't much count on Katrina, neither.
No, yeah, exactly.
I mean, even if we take as given what the right wingers say that you know God sent Katrina to wipe out the gay folk, the only place that was left relatively unscathed in New Orleans was the gay district
community.
Yeah, same
bad
thing.
Bad aim there. Just a bad aim.
Yeah, well, same thing happened in Galveston. The only thing left standing was the gay bar.
Is that right?
Oh yeah.
That's rather ironic.
Ironic? I don't know. I remember talking to Peter Godbold one time about flying home from Massachusetts, and said we were coming from D.C. into West Virginia, and there was this huge wall of clouds with lightning in it. You know, must have been about maybe 10 miles away. We were flying right beside it. Said, Peter, it looked like God's own little disco. You know, all the sparkles and the flashing lights and everything.
Right, right. Oh, yeah.
Who knows? Who knows?
I remember all that, Bob. Yep. I had platform shoes and stuff. You know.
I did, too. Oh! Leisure suits? I think we burned the last one a year or so ago. If the EPA ever finds out, I'm screwed.
When me and Gina first got married, she couldn't. She had to tell all her reverend. He had a pink suit.
Oh, God.
Oh, man. But.
Yeah, and you know, the photographic evidence is probably out there somewhere. I'd put that under lock and key, man.
I know I showed up at some cousin's wedding with it on, so I know that somewhere, well, I will be reminded of it, I'm sure.
Yeah, that, you don't just do that. Things like that do come back to haunt you.
Yes, they do. You know.
Well, I agree.
I don't have any sense. I was proud of it. I have no shame, but.
Hey, you know what? It takes a man's man to put on a pink leisure suit, brother.
Well, that's the way I feel about it. Yeah. That's the way I feel about it. So. Yeah.
I mean, you know, James Dobson, he's strictly the pinstripe, gray charcoal, gray pinstripe suits. He's not man enough to wear a pink leisure suit.
No, he isn't. No. Has he been found out to be gay yet?
No, but...
It'll be coming.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, you know, when you got...
Well, he's not gay. He was experimenting.
Right, yeah.
Whatever the guy that was... Had the gay or
wide stance,
male hookers, and
yeah, Ted Haggard,
crack, yeah,
and now this guy that's the chief financial officer of Cincinnati Christian University caught
gay.
Who can tell? He was just arrested and
not that that matters.
No, he was just arrested. He was just arrested and hauled in for what was it? Manually stimulating an undercover cop who was a guy.
Yeah.
Thank God for the English language.
Yes, yes.
I'm so glad that, you know, there's manually stimulating out there. Jesus.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, God. Well,
and
look,
that's why they can't govern.
That's exactly.
Between the Terry Schiavos and the manual stimulation,
oh, yeah,
who's got
that
time?
Episode one. Oh, my God. He couldn't come back for Katrina, but he came back for Terry Schiavo.
Yeah.
Too bad. But on a brighter note, how about them Steelers?
Them Steelers looking good.
Yeah, they are, man. I'm you know, I thank God the Plexico Bears left.
You couldn't stand a humiliation, could you?
No. No, I'm glad he left, man.
How do you do that? And
I don't know.
And, you know, no matter, apparently he wasn't that grievously shot. That's when you go and get rid of the illegal firearm that you, of course.
You know, I haven't read that. They said he in the leg. Where in the leg? In the hip? The inner thigh? Where did he have the gun? Was it stuffed in his belt?
And
waistband?
There's no way of knowing. It's impossible to tell. I know.
I don't know. It's
just drive.
Absolutely amazing.
It's a beautiful thing. But you know what? The playoffs should be a lot of fun, especially on the AFC side this year.
I think so, too. Well, Saturday, Sunday's at Dallas. You know. Pittsburgh plays Dallas.
Yeah, I want that to happen real bad.
Well, that's really a great thing for me. I told you, you know, my two favorite football teams are the Pittsburgh Steelers and whoever's playing Dallas.
Yeah, this is a double bonus.
Yeah, it is, man. It's real good.
Mr. Romo, meet Mr. Romo, meet Mr. Polamalu. Mr. Polamalu, meet Mr. Romo. I don't want to meet him anymore.
Did you watch the game Saturday or Sunday?
I caught some of it, yeah.
You know that the Harrison, the guy that stripped the ball twice and got the... Do you know what his nickname is on the Steelers team?
No.
Silverback. And he's very proud of it, as he should be. He's lethal, man.
Oh, he is.
Man, and, you know, Fulamahu, and I mean, them guys, that defense is...
Oh, when that defense is entirely healthy, it is...
You know, if they could only give a little bit of that to the offensive line, we'd be in a lot better shape.
That's kind of what you need. But, you know, it's been as good or better this year than I've seen in recent memory.
I mean, you know, my only problem is Roethlisberger spends too much time on his back, man. I mean, you know, I mean, the guy gets, you know.
That's not good for what they call quarterback longevity.
No, it is not. No, it is not. But.
And it's mighty hard to throw anything from, you know, that position.
Yes. So.
You know, I don't know. I'll give you a call during halftime on Sunday or something if everything's going well. Otherwise, I will leave you alone.
Yeah, you don't want to talk to me.
No, not if it's not going well.
I mean, you know, Sunday's game, you know, I mean, what were we, 30 seconds in and Roethlisberger threw a interception on the 15th?
I didn't think it was like a full minute in.
No, I don't think it was either. I'm sitting there going, uh-oh. It's not going to be one of these. Is it?
This could be a long day.
Yes, it could. Anyway, I just wanted to pass on my thoughts about
that. That's a beautiful idea.
I'm telling you, and I mean, I'm dead serious about that. This is the time. Your moment is now. You got to go for it. And, you know, and just like you say, the minute somebody threatens filibuster, then you make the motion and do it.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, congratulations on seeing our favorite Jesuit priest rat slapped by the court.
Yes, isn't that nice?
That was gratifying. You know, probably not time enough to go into this, but when you've got a Jesuit priest who's arguing for people to be paid less, how does he keep his Jesuit union card?
I truly don't understand that. And you know, we've written letters to his provincial and. I know he's gotten in trouble over it, but, you know, it doesn't seem to stop it because, well, he asked me, have you been writing letters? I said, yeah, we have, you know. Not just me, a lot of people.
Yeah, because you've pissed off a lot of people.
A whole lot of people, yeah.
There's a dichotomy there, Wayne, because on the one hand, I read that story in the newspaper, you know, about a Jesuit priest who's arguing for people to be paid poverty wages.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, I go over and I read the story about the former Guantanamo lawyer, military lawyer. And in talking about his experiences and sort of, you know, really coming clean about things for the first time, he said that what he saw at Guantanamo was so horrifying and so sickening and so disgusting and so un-American that the only thing he could think to do was to go to his Jesuit priest. And, you know, one of those religious moments, you know, where the, you know, and the light and the halos and everything, because he's just coming unglued to his priest, and his Jesuit priest looks at him and says, my son, you have no recourse but to resign. He said, and I did.
Right.
Now, that's what that ought to be.
That's exactly what that ought to be.
And this guy in Beckley, Father Acker?
I know.
I don't want to get you going because, you know.
I don't know what they do to him. I mean, you know, like what they used to do to you in the Army. You know, they took the buttons off your jacket and broke your sword in half and all that jazz.
Yeah, I guess they snap your rosary and throw the beads around or something.
Yeah, and, you know, pull off your little white collar or something and stomp it into the ground. I don't know, but anything he could come up with I would be happy with as long as he's no longer. I mean, how could the man call himself a priest? I don't understand it.
Me neither.
And how can he order it, you know? You know, they should strip him of his title. But,
yeah, and maybe
and,
so.
You know, he's talking about now he's going to the Supreme Court. And I talked to our lawyer today, and I said, now, we're hoping he goes to the Supreme Court, aren't we? Well, we never hoped that. I said, well, I'm hoping that because, you know, I want it ended right there. And I want a fresh, you know, the last time this issue went to the Supreme Court was Hardy Board of Education against the Department of Labor, and that was like 14 years ago. And we won,
yeah.
You know. But I'd like to have a, you know, when this comes up in 2009 or 2010, I'd like to be able to refer to the 2009 case.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. And you got two good justices, one of whom, if I'm thinking correctly, voted in the affirmative on the Hardy case in the first place, in Peggy Workman.
Was she there then?
I
93, I think.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she was there.
Okay.
Maybe not. Okay. But you got two. So you got two, and you know maybe three. So get it set and get it done. You're absolutely right, Wayne. Good to hear from you, brother.
Good to talk to you.
Talk to you soon.
Hello, everybody out there. Send money.
Well, you know, we ought to talk about that a little bit another evening, sometime in the near future, so folks can understand.
Okay, all right. I'd be more than willing to do that.
All right, but you got a grandson to make sure he's asleep.
Well, you know, Mama took care of him. Yeah.
Oh, aren't Mom's grand?
He's sleeping now.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Them women have the touch, you know.
Yeah, they do.
All right, indeed.
Take care, boss.
All right, man. Have a good evening.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Wayne. That's the boss. And we will talk, because I said something Monday night, and I didn't say it idly. We are teetering on a precipice here. And so maybe, I don't know, Friday or something, maybe Wayne and I can just sort of lay out things for you a little bit. But, by the way, it's about 14 minutes before the hour, I got every line but one lit up right now. I don't know how many of them still have people on them, okay? But we're going to go through this, and we're going to continue the conversation, and let me just make this pledge to you, this promise. If we get to a situation like this toward the end of the program, you know, I don't have to deal with satellite systems that have to switch over the automation or anything. That's another one of the beauties of what's going on here. This is free. This is free in terms of not constrained. So I'm going to march through these buttons, and as long as there's people there to talk to, by God, we're going to keep talking. All right? Especially since I played hooky, but for a very good reason, but played hooky last night. So let's see what's going on here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
I'm okay. Happy post-Thanksgiving and all.
Yeah, we're in recovery mode now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well. Where to begin? By the way, one prediction.
Yes?
Joe Scarborough is running for Florida Senate.
Well, so he'll have to run against Jeb Bush, won't he?
Because
Jeb's.
I think he's gonna throw his hat in there.
Jeb's making those senatorial bleatings. And of course, it kind of makes me a little sick to know.
I think the whole Bush name is kind of tainted now.
I hope it is, but you know what? I thought we were done with him when their daddy left. I thought we'd seen how much of a screw-up a Bush could be. But every time I think, you know, it's like I keep saying, though, Kevin, every time I think I've dug all the way to the basement, I find a trap door and there's more Republicans, even lower down. It's that way with Bushes, too.
Yeah. But I have a feeling he may throw his hat in there. If, you know, what you said with Jeb Bush may be true, but I just don't think the Bush family they have the clout, but I think it would be within their best interest to stay in the shadows for like a generation or two.
No, because they've already said that they're going to make Jebby be president. They're out to be sort of like the anti-matter version of the Kennedys. Because the entire arc of the Bush legacy is this unending quest for money and respect. You know, you got to get
respect. Get the money, respect.
But you know, when Pappy Bush was vice president under Ronnie Reagan, Nancy and Ronnie had absolutely no respect for them. Just, and you go back to the Nixon administration, and there's Nixon appointing George. What was it? The first appointment was chair of the Republican National Committee. And he did it and made comments that, you know, well, you know, the guy's an idiot, but I got to give him some kind of a job.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that unending quest for respect and more money that motivates them. And they're convinced that at some point Jebby will be president. So, it's kind of like, you know, I've talked about it before out here in the country, Kevin. If you like kill a copperhead in the garden and you lop off its head, you cannot, that thing will not be dead till the sun goes down, even without a head on it.
And that's the Bush family.
That's the Bush family.
Yeah.
The threat is never truly, truly eliminated.
Wow. Yeah, but, okay, that whole thing with Walmart, and unfortunately I'm beating a dead horse, but.
No. Go right ahead.
It's very symbolic of what America or the West have done, particularly to Haiti. You know, Haiti, and I want to bring this up because I'm currently, as you know, I'm working on a manuscript, and I go really deep into Haiti. Haiti, historically, was the first foreign policy challenge towards the United States post-revolution.
That's very true.
It was one of the first, I should say. Not the first, but one of, but a major foreign policy.
Well, there's
to have,
go ahead.
Yeah. To have a slave revolt, and which was very detrimental to the interests of the Southern plantocracy.
Well, there's that, but not only that, Kevin, it's the slave revolt in Haiti that diverted resources from Napoleon to put down and quell. That slave revolt is what eventually sucked up his treasury so that it became a burden for him to continue to own, for France to continue to own the Louisiana Purchase, which then engendered the United States and the Jefferson administration purchasing that territory from France.
Yeah, but also as far as the dealings of how this country has dealt with black people, it has its infancy in Haiti. As far as, you know, isolation, disenfranchisement, divide and conquer. Okay, Haiti, you have to understand, yeah, it was the first African, it was the first black republic and all, but it had a significant amount of mixed race people. Guess what they did? It was an uneasy alliance between the blacks and the mixed race people. They offered them refuge in New Orleans. So basically all their skilled people and talent, and if you go to any urban area to this day, any urban area, okay, what do you have? Who owns the businesses? Non-black people like Arabs, Jews, what have you, Koreans. Who's the professional class? The mixed race African population. Who's the lumpen proletariat? You know, the darker skinned blacks. And that's Haiti.
Yes, it is.
So, to me, it's very significant. And what happened to this guy? Here's a guy who was laid off from a fairly, I wouldn't say a decent job, but some petty customer service job.
Yeah, he was doing a customer service job that was better than what he wound up doing at Walmart, even without the trampling.
Yeah, and, you know, they stampeded him to death. Don't forget, you look at an administration, this Bush administration, who kidnapped a democratically elected sitting president.
Yes, Jean-Bertrand Aristide.
Yeah, and put him in the middle of Africa somewhere, in the Central African. What is it about Haiti where the United States feel they can do whatever they want?
Well, even Smedley Butler in War is a Racket refers to the enforcer work that he did in Haiti.
Yeah.
And that goes back to the earliest three decades of the 20th century, the aughts and the teens and the 20s.
Yeah. We have, you know, abused, it's like Haiti, if all else fails, we can always beat up on Haiti.
Yeah, that's right.
It's the same.
Well, but that's the extension of the same policy as what happened in Grenada.
Yeah, but Grenada's a bit different.
Well, then, yeah, it's politically different and it's culturally different.
You see, you have to understand, coming from a British West Indian background, England kind of sheltered, and this is why, like, you'll find a lot of British West Indians still having a lot of Anglophilism in them. Yours truly.
Yeah, cricketers.
England sort of,
cricketers. Cricket players. Yeah, absolutely. Rugby. The classics of English culture.
Yeah. Because England kind of sheltered a lot of these islands from the, Grenada was very symbolic because that would be, once England was in no position to do anything in the Caribbean, then America stepped in. And this is what happened.
Yeah, very true. Very true. Okay. And I learned probably more about Haiti, in one book than I have in any other. And that's a chapter in Jared Diamond's book, Collapse, where he talks about the environmental and ecological differences on a single island between Haiti and the Dominican Republic.
Oh, yeah, and it's a huge difference. You know, Dominican Republic, lush, green, you know, forest, that Haiti is becoming a desert.
Well, Haiti has been, it's the single most deforested place in the Western Hemisphere.
Exactly.
It's a Caribbean version of Rapa Nui.
Oh yeah. And I'm writing the and it's like, as you know, my family's Jamaican. How intertwined the two histories between Jamaica and Haiti are.
Yes.
In many ways, on many levels.
Well, Jamaica is British, but it also has a previously French element within it, as does Haiti.
No, it was Spanish.
Was it Spanish?
Yeah.
French
never occupied.
Okay. I'm mistaken then.
Yeah, but, you know, the thing is, again, Jamaica, you know, because of it being a British, former British colony, it was sheltered from a lot of the American bigotry and oppression. And, you know, yeah, all these islands have their problems, don't get me wrong, but Haiti, it becomes like a problem plus plus, a problem 20 times full.
An epic fail, if you would.
Yeah. Yes.
And so this young man, and to be honest, I do not know the proper pronunciation of his first name.
Neither do I.
But, you know, here's a guy in the United States who was apparently a very, very lovable individual.
Yeah.
Big guy, big movie buff, just like the rest of us, so profoundly human. And Walmart found a way to strip him of every last bit of it.
Yeah, exactly. And this is what, and if there's anything, what Haiti represents is what unchecked, unregulated capitalism does to a society.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, because...
I mean, I never even mentioned it, but we, and I'm ashamed of myself, but we had the school collapse there, what, 2-3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was I forget what the name of it was, but it was obviously built in such a way as to it couldn't stand what was being done to it.
Yeah.
It was overloaded. It was poorly constructed. And look, you know, there's the right wing's free market in all its glory. Stuff a few more kids in there, and you know, build it as shoddy and as on the cheap as you can. And so what if it collapses?
Yeah, they're only black kids. But, you know, what's so funny, ironically enough, okay, Haiti is always used by a lot of these fundamentalist churches, send us money so we can help this orphanage down in Haiti. It's a big industry down there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you know who perfected the biodiesel conversion? A Haitian.
Really? Yeah. Probably as a function of necessity.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm seeing here.
They do it so well. They take regular gas-operated cars and are able to do it.
Yeah, it can be done. Our buddy Mike from Woodstock calls in periodically, and he's a very happy man who drives around in a converted BMW.
Yeah, but I'm talking, you could get a car right off the lot, a brand-new gas-operated car.
Oh, really?
It's a Haitian guy who knows how to do it and make it converted to biodiesel, and he has a very thriving enterprise in Haiti doing it.
That's a bright spot, because there aren't a lot of thriving anythings.
In Haiti, no.
Yeah. That's how you wind up with that young man in Valley Stream.
Yeah.
But we've been more than happy to exploit Haiti. We've been more than happy to let Haiti sink into misery and death and disease. Well, and yet the right wingers turn around, Kevin. Oh, we can't have all. What's the difference? Just since you've got the topic and the door open, what is the difference between a Haitian refugee and a Cuban one?
Well, one is a lot darker than the other.
Yeah.
For the most part.
And the other
even
being
though,
that the Republican.
They have some pretty black Cubans out there floating around, mm-hmm. and that's why when Castro had the Mariel boat lift, which was predominantly Afro-Cubans, the Cuban community wanted them sent right back.
Yep. And the other thing being that the Republican Party has not figured out a way to get the Haitian community to vote Republican yet. But thanks to the Cuban community in Florida's support for Republican policies, they are more, you know, they've been more than happy in the past to craft this, you know, what's it called, the dry foot policy?
Oh, yeah.
But there's no dry foot policy for a Haitian refugee fleeing something a million times worse than anything that happens in Castro's Cuba. No dry foot for you, Mr. Haitian.
Nope, absolutely not.
So it's a glaring example, and I appreciate you bringing this up. It's a glaring example of the hypocrisy that's informed our view of the Caribbean.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it's something that I'm writing about, and I just added an excerpt onto this young man because, you know, I want him remembered somehow, some way. I want him remembered. And because the fact of the matter is, I know you're running on time. I just want to make this, is that you should have seen the people who trampled him. Literally, these are people who wouldn't move any other day but a Black Friday. Most of them were like 300-pound house rows.
Mm. See, I just got past a news item from the chat room stating that some of the, you know, this man was the only one killed, but he wasn't the only one trampled. And there are members of that crowd out there who are now suing the police, saying that they were standing around drinking coffee and doing nothing to maintain crowd control. There's a totality of circumstances here that's just sickening. My God, they hung a sign on the wall that said Blitz Line starts here. Advertisements. The Black Friday doorbusters. I wonder if anybody will use doorbuster again in their advertising.
I don't know. But it's just, then we wonder why people want to target Americans for bombings and all that when we go abroad.
Sure. Exactly. And we're getting to the point where we treat our own people as poorly as, or not getting to the point, where we are at the point where we treat segments of our, look at, well, good God, New Orleans and the Gulf Coast. We do. We treat our own citizens as poorly as we treat the people that we're invading.
Well, the thing is, it's starting to trip over into the white community, and I think that's what a lot of whites are starting to realize, hence the victory of Barack Obama, because look at, you know, the car industry, and look at Galveston, Texas. Look at, you know, the Mississippi chapter of Katrina.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of white America, especially working class white America, is starting to wake up to that fact. And, you know, like I said in my book, there are two classes of people. There's only working people and the board of directors. You know, and this is middle management. element who think they're so in charge, who are so fooled into believing they're in charge and we're better than you nonsense, who are fooled into voting Republican. You know, in Europe, middle management are unionized.
Well, doesn't that make just a world of sense? Because middle management works a lot more closely with the rank and file than they do with upper level management. And they've got a greater stake in how the folks underneath them perform than they do in how the folks above them do.
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's neat.
Yeah, in Europe, management is unionized. The only people that are not unionized are owners.
And they've got sort of a built-in union now, don't they?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, same thing over here. You know, $10 million a year and up crowd. That's a de facto union in and of itself, because they can snap their fingers at Congress and Congress will give them $700 billion for the asking.
Can you imagine if this country went on a strike French style?
Oh, it would be a beautiful thing to behold. And if anything like that ever comes close to happening, we will see a transformation of this country into what it ought to be and what it can be and live up to its potential. That will be something that people who are children now will talk about when they're ancient.
Yeah, but I think if we had a French-style strike, which is the whole... First of all, I think it would be very violent, because the last time something like that was attempted, Hoover unleashed MacArthur out on the crowd. You know, so, yeah, maybe a beautiful thing, but be prepared for it to be a very...
No, well, I'm talking about it in terms of being a beautiful thing, in terms of it being literally French-style. Insofar as organized labor being respected and having a voice that is listened to seriously by the government.
Oh, yeah, well, I don't know. Like I said, I think a lot of working class people are just so, you know, I thank God for the situation that I am in now, because I've had so much time to think. And that's the thing. When you work in under humane conditions, you have time to think. And that's a very dangerous thing.
But it's also a very good thing, Kevin, because a worker who has time to think has time to make the product the very best that it can be on the planet.
Well, you see, they're not interested in that. Especially American-style capitalism, they are so not interested in that.
Not even a little bit.
No, they don't care about quality and all that. Hell, quality hurts their bottom line.
Well, quality—the quality is something that is talked about in sort of academic terms, by way of how much quality can we get from Chinese slave labor for how little money.
Or quality should only go to those who can afford it. Kind of like the mentality of equality goes to those who can afford it.
Well, that's the truth. Kevin, good to hear from you, brother. Thanks for bringing all that up.
Okay, my brother. Okay, bye.
Take care. Bye now.
Okay, bye.
And we have we've slipped over the top of the hour, but as long as there are people on these lines, we will continue. Oh, well, okay, line's cleared. One last thing before we go, because this is huge, 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 giant, humongous good news. And I have to share it with you. This program's not going to end tonight before you've heard this. You know, by virtue... Damn your tears. You listen to this program. And because you listen to this program, you know more about what mountaintop removal does in Appalachia, not just West Virginia, but in Virginia and Kentucky and Tennessee, even in the parts of Ohio. You know. You would not know that if you did not listen to this program, or you would not have the information as readily available. I got extremely frustrated this morning when I went online to read the local papers, as I do every day. And I saw a news article, news, the word is used advisedly at best. I saw a news article in the local Beckley Rag about how the Friends of Coal Ladies Auxiliary is going to brighten up the holidays for 26 families. Right? Make Christmas a little brighter for 26 families. And how the Friends of Coal are, and I quote, giving back to the community. You know, the folks at this newspaper, that particular newspaper, are so clueless that Friends of Coal is now just an acronym today to them. And the headline said, Christmas to be brighter for families because of FOC. No, really, I'm not kidding. Now, I resisted the urge to refer to them in the term that was invented for the Fockers. I didn't do it, but I did fire up the old email machine, and I sent a letter off. And this is all going to, we're just going to close this way, but this is all going to make sense by the time we're done. I sent a letter off to that particular newspaper. Don't know if they'll print it or not. Sent it around to a few folks, and I shared it. I shared it with some friends and some people that I'm proud to work with. And I also sent it including. There we go. There. Wow, having trouble here. Folks I work with, including. Sue, ELO in the chat room, den mother to the horn, and blog maintainer extraordinaire, as well as videographer. She wrote back and said, you know, this is just great. I'm going to turn it into a blog post, because I'd also sent along a photograph that Michael, Kid A from the chat room, and Jen, his partner, had shot at Kayford Mountain, and it is a distant sun setting over, well, you can see it at headonradionetwork.com. Just go down to recent posts. Bob Kincaid blasts back at the coal companies. But Sue combined the photograph that Michael and Jen shot at Kayford with what I had said to the newspaper. And I'm just going to share it with you, because this, just trust me, this all comes together, okay? Sue said, we'll get to Bob's letter that's in response to a local newspaper article in a minute. But first, you need to look at the picture below. It's a photo Horn friend Kid A took of Kayford Mountain, or what's left of it, in West Virginia. This picture would never have been possible, and you would not have been able to see the sun setting that low in the sky from this vantage point, had the wonderful coal companies not blown the mountains the hell out of the way first. How friendly does that sound? Bob titles this picture, Sunset in Hell. And as I said, the article that's referred to was one talking about how Christmas is going to be brighter thanks to FOC. And I got to thinking about it, how FOC was giving back to the community, as the article said. And what it meant for Christmas to be brighter, and what came out of it was this. So nice to see that the Friends of Coal are giving back to the community this Christmas season. It's the least they can do. Really. The very, very least. Since these friends spend the rest of the year taking away from West Virginians. Mountaintop removal coal takes away our health and well-being, our homes, our communities, our children's future, and even the bare necessities of life, like clean air and water. While they give toys and trinkets during the holiday season, the Friends of Coal give 3 million pounds of high explosives back to the community every day the rest of the year. They give back to the community the mercury that accounts for IQ deficits in our babies. They give back to the community the asthma that has made rescue inhalers a common place in our children's pockets. They give back to the community selenium and arsenic and aluminum and a whole host of other poisons in the water we use to bathe and baptize our children. They give back to the community the clouds of ghastly pollution visible from space that choke the very wind. Some of it from West Virginia coal they sell to China. The West Virginia coal burned in China powers the production of the poisons in baby's formula, poison in our toothpaste, poison in our pet's food, and even the often toxic toys these friends will give back to the community to celebrate the birth of the Prince of Peace. Early European arrivals to this continent gave the Indians blankets laced with smallpox and called it charity. The Register Herald article claims the Friends of Coal are giving back to the community, too. What they're giving, however, wasn't printed. And I had no sooner... I hit send on that. And then this evening in doing show prep, I find a story. Guess what? Newsflash. One in three toys that will be given to children this year in the United States of America tested positive for unsafe levels of a whole host of poisonous chemicals and other toxins. One in three. Now, the Toy Manufacturers Association didn't like that. We don't think that's very nice of them to print that. Actually, that's the wrong guy. We do not
appreciate the information being given.
We don't believe they're correct. And there's that word. It's prayer meeting. We're wrapping it up, sunshine. But there's that damned word again. Believe.
We don't believe they're correct.
Well, you know, they tested for this stuff with an X-ray spectrometer. It's not like they were unwrapping Barbies and holding it up to their nose. Smell any selenium in there? Mm-mm. Science. Science.
So, yeah. And, you know, the Friends of Coal and Mountaintop Removal are just the poisonous gift that keeps on giving here. And hence why I said I'm damn near tears at what I have just read. You know our buddy Nick Regalado from Coal River Mountain Watch. Nick just sent this along. This is in reference to the financing of mountaintop removal. As Bank of America expands our support and commitment to energy efficiency, renewable energy, and other low-carbon energy sources through our lending, investments, products, and services and operations, we recognize at the present time fossil fuels, and coal in particular, will continue to supply a significant amount of the energy needed to power our society. There are environmental and other impacts associated with any energy source. For coal, these impacts result from extraction, processing, and combustion. That's kind of the whole coal cycle, isn't it? Bank of America continues to engage key stakeholders, including coal producers, utility companies, leading universities, and the environmental community on energy, coal, the environment, and the necessary technologies to promote low-carbon energy. From these discussions, we have developed a policy that will ensure that Bank of America plays a significant role as a leading financial services company in promoting the responsible use of coal. Our policy is focused on the following elements. Technology. Advanced technologies such as carbon capture and storage that capture carbon from fossil fuel plants and then sequester that carbon in geologic reservoirs will be necessary for addressing global climate change while enabling economies to flourish. Through our partnerships, we will promote the necessary conditions for implementing carbon capture and storage on a global scale. We will employ our resources as a financial institution to promote the development and deployment of these advanced technologies to reduce the carbon emissions produced by the burning of fossil fuels. We will support, adopt, and adhere to leading practices for the management of the environmental impacts associated with coal. Bank of America has taken a leadership position by committing to the carbon principles and reducing emissions associated with our utility portfolio as best practices for managing risks associated with coal. And then this, extraction. Bank of America is particularly concerned about surface mining conducted through mountaintop removal in locations such as Central Appalachia. We therefore will phase out financing of companies whose predominant method of extracting coal is through mountaintop removal. While we acknowledge that surface mining is economically efficient and creates jobs, it can be conducted in a way that minimizes environmental impacts in certain geographies. Banks talk funny. They write funnier. That is about as close to plain language as any bank can possibly get to stating that they will not be part of the devastation and destruction of entire American, I say Appalachian a lot for a reason, but entire American communities through mountaintop removal. Yea, verily, I am nigh unto weeping. There are people dead and gone who have struggled, who did not live to see this day. And yet, the fight will be won by them, and we will remember them in their absence, and not even their absence, for they live and live and live in our hearts. There are families that continue to struggle, communities that continue to struggle against what's still being done to them. But we have been to the mountain, and we have seen over Jordan. This is going to end. I stood in the play area over 4 years ago at Marsh Fork Elementary School for a rally. And it was the first time that I had met many of the people who are now my heroes. Whom I have come to love so dearly. And we stood in a circle at one point, a sacred circle, led by a wonderful man from the American Indian Movement, who told us, and I took it to heart, he said, "We've already won. They've already lost. Now all that's left is for them to leave." And it's coming true. It's coming true. It isn't full-blown true yet, but it's coming true. And it's not just coming true because of Bank of America's actions. Bank of America's actions were predicated upon your commitment, upon your concern, upon your ability and willingness to talk about this to people who likely would never, ever have heard of it before, what mountaintop removal is. You did this. You and so many thousands of others. You and my heroes who have had their homes shot at, their animals killed, their lives threatened. You have done this. And we will see this day. We will see the day when we talk about what used to be mountaintop removal. We will see the day when we no longer have to struggle to save mountains, but we can finally start the earnestly hard part of the job, and that is restoring these communities.
I was talking with someone the other day about what that means. And it means the hardest work we have ever known in our lives. Because mountain culture has been destroyed by the likes of Massey Energy. But what a labor of love it will be to know that the gun is no longer at our heads and that we can start looking toward a future that doesn't have the blasting and the poisons in it that mountaintop removal brings every day all over Appalachia. The day when we Appalachian people can stand up and say, you've finally realized that we're just as American as you. That day is near. That day is in sight. And the debt of gratitude that I owe to you, to everyone who has ever said one thing to one other human being to make them be aware of what's going on here, the debt I owe is immeasurable. Because mountaintop removal can't happen without the collusion and the connivance of the banks. And one humongous bank just said, we will not have a part in this anymore. Others will follow suit. Bank of America is doing this. Why? I'll tell you why. Among other things, if you go to the website and click on that link that I mentioned a little bit ago and you see that photograph of sunset in hell, you'll see the same thing that Bank of America saw when they went to Kayford Mountain. Because any human being who sees it, who has anything resembling a soul, cannot look on that and think that it's all right. That we who live here are expendable. None but the most sociopathic. None but the sickest. None but the most mercenary and murderous. None but the likes of Don Blankenship and his ilk can do that. Bank of America saw it. Bank of America, seeing it, felt inside their hearts the speech of the soul. We're going to win this. And by we, I don't just mean West Virginians. I mean people all over this planet. We're going to win this. And once we win this, we can start fixing the rest. And I thank you. And I hope you will continue to talk about it, to tell others, because we have it within our grasp to make mountaintop removal a part of a brutish past and no part of a beautiful future. Thank you, everyone. And thank you for, if you did, for staying tuned in past the show's ending time. Thank you for participating in whatever method or manner you chose. Thank you very, very kindly to the individual who earlier this evening sent an email with a significant contribution. In honor of Jim Varnum, the contribution said. Thank you. Thank you very kindly. Thank you for our regular contributors who are there as regular as clockwork when each new month begins. Do you realize now what you're doing? Do you realize now the gravity and the worth of your own sacrifices
I hope you do, because I do. And there is a debt of gratitude owed that can never be repaid. But you can say, I made it possible to help end a nightmare and wake up and build a new day. You did that. I didn't do that. You did that. Thank you, John Fox, Peter Godbold, Ben Birch. Thank you is far too weak a word to ever use to describe my friends and my heroes at Coal River Mountain Watch. But thank you. And always, 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 God, you'd be so proud to hear that news. RMR. Gina, it's all for you.